May we start? Suppose if you can ensure that the door is closed, we'll greatly assist our work. Right, the Combat Minister and the Deputy Minister and your delegation, then again, WPL Ubanan Namfanj. The department, as well as FASA, understand FASA is a brand new CEO. Wish to welcome her and wish her all of the best. I'm sure coming here for Eileen and Henya is going to be a blessing for time going forward. I think we would want to start. I understand from my comrades here that we are likely to have an early day today. Might not be a bad thing under the circumstances. Well, by way of starting, Comrade Minister, I think we would want to hand over to you and your delegation, as always. Purpose of introductions, so we know who we're dealing with. See, the Auditor General's office is represented. I'm not sure about National Treasury. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. And the members of Parliament, and then we can then engage from there. But want to thank you, comrade, for having made time to assist the process. We back from the election, so it's back to our normal work. Right. I just want us to be settled the size on the right so that we can start. Comrade Minister, hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. We should start, we should ask the DG to introduce the delegation. But also thank you for allowing us to prepare properly, and because we're supposed to meet during the last quarter, and we asked for the postponement of the meeting because we had a summit in Durban, and the committee allowed us not to come to the meeting, and we really would like to register that we appreciate that, and hope that this meeting will provide you with all the information you need. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Comrade Minister. I will hand over to the DG, but I'm sure Bandavangala is solo, but Avata Kulumel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you and to all the members of the committee. My name is Rusi Matonsela, Director General of the Department. I'm going to encourage members of the delegation, which is co-led by by the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and at the technical level, co-chair, I mean, led by myself and Ms. Virginia Peterson, to allow everybody who's part of the delegation to introduce themselves. Just in case, that's the only opportunity they have to speak.
I'm Bongintuli, Deputy Minister of Social Development.
morning, Prabhupada, the Chief Financial Officer of Social Development.
You can make switch on the mic.
Morning, I'm Tulahanyo Motosi, Acting Chief Financial Officer, SASA.
Morning, I'm Bandile Matatuka, Executive Manager, Customer Services.
Good morning, my name is Rapasha Ramukhopa, Acting Executive Manager, Strategy and Business Development, SASA.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Tandi Sibanyoni, Executive Manager, Internal Audit and Fraud Management. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Anita Samad. I'm from the Strategy Unit.
Thank you.
Morning, my name is Prince Van Faber from National Treasury.
Right. Thank you. Can we move to the Auditor General?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the Honorable Members. My name is Musa Songwa from the Auditor General.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members, Aubrey Arndorf, Senior Manager, Auditor General.
Thank you very much. Can we have members introducing themselves? Karala Pogu and Numza.
Yabonga Kailo, Naren Singh, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning. My name is Mark Steele, Member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Pete Pretorius, Member of SCOPA.
Morning, Roy Ainsley, Member of SCOPA.
Morning, Thapelo Chilwane, Member of SCOPA.
Morning, Member of SCOPA, Gadrutsa.
Morning, Seth Mutandi, Member of SCOPA.
Morning, Sarah Manian, Member of SCOPA.
Tumela Mahne, Devali Matladi, Member of SCOPA.
Right in the back. So we have a member of parliament there.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Helen Lemula, member of Portfolio Committee.
Portfolio Committee.
Social
Development. Social Development. Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. Well, Comrade Minister, you recall that sometimes early last year we did have an engagement on some of the issues pertaining to both the department, but in large measure to the South African Social Security Agency. And this engagement is not different in terms of that process of exchange of information. Getting clarity on those grey areas, and as always, our own contribution as Parliament in terms of what do we think might need to happen to address some of the challenges that are there. I think it's pretty obvious. FASA plays a very, very critical role in terms of the efforts of government to alleviate the grinding poverty that afflicts so many of our people. And therefore its operations and the extent to which it is able to fulfill that mandate and fulfill it timeously and very well is very important. I must, however, register our little disappointment, and I'm sure it's not something that is within your purview, Comrade Minister. We had hoped to also have the cash pay master services people, because we understand that well, at least for now, FASA does not through its own employees disburse the physical cash. It depends on those people. But if we were to share with you the correspondences that we have been exchanging with them. They will justify why one would happy. And they are not here, but apparently they have their own date on which they want to see us. Even though in part we had postponed some of the days to try and accommodate them. So from the problem of the date, by last week it was the problem of the agenda. When we addressed the agenda, then it was back to the date. So we have a sense that government gives tenders to some people who have no regard for state institutions, for cultural institutions, which might be a reflection of the extent to which they consider the people they work with. For them, it's just a money-making process. But for the rest of us, we're just incidental. I wanted to register that right from the beginning, that whatever might have been the practice and whatever leverages they might be having, they don't extend to these walls of parliament. And it's important that that sense should be maintained. So we're not happy with those people of the cash pay master service. But they are still on our agenda. We'll see how we deal with that when we deal with them. But aside from them, Comrade Minister, I'm sure that taking from how we discussed the issues last year, you left us with a very clear sense of appreciating the importance of dealing with some of the challenges that are in SASA. And it is those challenges that we still would want to talk to. I'll hand over to my comrades to kickstart the process. And as always, Comrade Minister, you note the issues. At the end of the engagement, we'll give you the opportunity to talk as the political head to some of these issues and give some response or some direction in terms of how you view them and how maybe in your position you'll be able to assist the process to get things right. Having said that, I want to hand over to Comrade Chilwane to kickstart the process. Comrade Chilwane.
Thank you, Chairperson. My focus areas will be on transfers and subsidies. That will be starting at page 115 of the department on the annual report. The annual report of the department, the DSD. We understand that the financial statement of the department has earned a qualified opinion in contrast to the two previous unqualified audit opinions. And probably it is important to note that this occurred not within the department itself, but within the SASA, which is the agent to the department. But I just want to first address the issue of accountability between the department and SASA. To check, make matters question, to check that seeing as what happened in SASA has an impact on the audit report of the department. Maybe my first question will be saying, why did it happen that SASA was established without probably clear reporting lines between the department and its own agent? That will be my first question.
So
Thank you, Honourable Member. Chairperson, I wouldn't say that the reporting lines between the department and the agency are not clear. I think the reporting lines are clear. Perhaps the difficulty may be that the reporting lines as they stand in the current arrangement are not sufficient to enable the department to do what in the eyes of the Auditor General it is supposed to do. Because what we currently have are systems of oversight over the sort of Confidential Security Agency, which relate to the in-year monitoring of monthly reports on the finance side and quarterly reports on the performance side. Those reports come in. We look at them within the limits of the current arrangement. So the reporting lines are clear. What is complicated is the fact that, unlike in many ordinary relationships between an agency established in terms of the Schedule 3 of the Public Finance Management Act and the Department of Social Development in this instance, where ordinarily funds that are allocated for the work that is supposed to be done by the agency would ordinarily be permitted for transfer. In this instance, that is not the case. And that then gives rise to what is colloquially referred to as dual accountability of the Chief Executive Officer of SASA as well as the Director General of the Department of Social Development. That's what you're referring to. I would say no, that is not reporting lines, but rather there is a conflation of accountability and responsibility in respect of the money allocated for transfers to households. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe to check between the insufficient of the reporting lines, as the DG is saying, probably what are the plans that are there in which are being put in place to try and correct the situation for the reporting lines to be in a proper, manageable way?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Chairperson, we have since put together what is called a corporate governance framework between ourselves and the South African Social Security Agency, which framework seeks to bring together all components of the department that have an oversight responsibility over the South African Social Security Agency. Those include our branch responsible for policy on social assistance, together with our finance unit that exercises financial oversight over the agency, the entity oversight chief directorate, which is in fact coordinating this framework I've just referred to, which is responsible for the governance oversight over the agency. What has become apparent from the findings of the Auditor General is that there are other aspects of, or shall I say, components of the department which would need to come into that framework, and those would include our internal audit function, which would need to satisfy itself of the veracity of certain of the information we receive through quarterly reports from the South African Social Security Agency. But some of those pronouncements are still to be tested on whether, in fact, such operation would be truly consistent with the relationship of a Schedule 3A entity and a department of government. Because a Schedule 3A entity is independent in its operation, and the extent to which we are able to exercise oversight in the manner contemplated by the Auditor General is a matter that remains to be tested.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. The DG, if we could turn maybe to page 117, there are issues that you have already raised in terms of trying to have proper reporting lines, as you have said, even though they are not sufficient. You've mentioned leadership and governance, but I just wanted to check to really to have the clearly defined responsibilities and the accountability of the entity in terms of your financial and performance management, as you have already alluded, in terms of leadership and governance. Specifically, when I said we could check to a page 117, where this three issues have been raised by the AG. And what do you have to say about that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Chairperson, I think my response is linked to the one I've just given, but I will add to it and say that whilst we've taken steps to fulfill the expectations of the AG, based on the pronouncements they've made on our financials, what we have done nonetheless is to raise the same question that was presented, or rather raised in this committee before, with regard to the flow of funds, which is essentially at the heart of this difficulty we're trying to resolve. That matter has already been raised between our Minister of Social Development and the Minister of Finance, and the National Treasury has since been tasked to look at possible ways of permitting the funds to flow in a manner that avoids the problem I've referred to of dual accountability between the Chief Executive Officer of the agency and the Director General of the Department.
I want to make a suggestion that, you know, maybe let us suspend the questions to the DG, and we go straight to FASA, and when we're done with FASA, then we can come back there, because the issues that are being raised are actually issues emanating from the failures by FASA to do their work. So maybe once we've dealt with the details of FASA's work, then we can come back and say the department, having your oversight role, what needs to be adjusted, what needs to be done, so that you can be able to effectively do your oversight work.
Chairperson, I agree with you, but you know, I don't know, because transfers are monies that are being transferred to the department, from the department to the agents. So they interlink. I don't know. Probably, maybe with your guidance or the DG guidance, when I pose questions, because I was just going straight to the. I think that was my last question, basically, to be... So I'm just going to zoom into FASA, which maybe the DG will then be able to say, maybe FASA can be able to answer those questions, because I was just going to ask in terms of the social grant expenditure, that is the transfer that is being made by the department, so I'm not sure where I should go.
No, continue.
Okay. Yeah, check when you check to see the FASA annual report. That is page 39. Maybe the CEO could also assist to
page 39
of the SASSA annual report, where the AG talks about the report, the annual report talks about the audit committee, which the internal controls are ineffective, and that some individuals sit in both audit committees, which impact on SASSA's main challenges that it has, and that the department has its own set of books. I just want to check to the DG on this one, that the audit committee alerts the accounting authorities in the department to the implementation of the negative impact to the department in terms of the audit committees of SASSA. Because I think probably they'll report to you. Just not sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were remarks made during your exchange, and I'm not certain whether that's still a matter I need to deal with regard to transfers, or I should simply respond to the question as posed.
Respond to the question
as posed. Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, the audit committees are there to assist the accounting officer of the department and the accountable authority in the agency, being the CEO, in the management of finances in the two entities. At present, the department and SASSA have separate audit committees, albeit that, as I recall, probably only about one person sits on both, but it could be more. In fact, rather than it being seen in a negative light, it is probably a good thing. In fact, what is being punted is whether it is not desirable to have one audit committee. Because the risks, although they traverse or straddle two organizations, they are effectively a part of the same continuum, and it may even be a good idea to have one audit committee. But at this point in time, what we are encouraging is the two audit committees to have joint meetings. In that way, we will avoid some of the challenges we currently face. As we have seen from the audit reports, Chairperson, matters relating to transfers to households, relating to the money that is on the financial house of the department, have to be dealt with by the Audit Committee of Social Development. Yet the operations about which the audit is concerned are to be dealt with by a different audit committee. The operations are the responsibility of SASSA, and SASSA appeared before a different audit committee, before which those matters don't arise, because those matters are not on the financials of SASSA. So we have quite an untenable situation, which is why, in the interim, what has been suggested, and in fact supported, is that the two audit committees must, from time to time, meet to exchange notes and make sure that the continuum is looked at from beginning to end. I hope I've assisted the Honourable Member in that response. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. DJ, I think that maybe this question that I'm going to ask probably to be the last statement to the department on itself. The AG state that out of 84 billion worth of transfers and subsidies, this office could not satisfy itself on the occurrence of social grants expenditure to the value of 10.5 billion. Maybe if you could get an explanation onto that, the not satisfactory point of it from the AG's office.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Chairperson, I will not. I don't suppose that the Office of the Auditor General may have briefed the committee on this matter, but perhaps I should proceed from the premise that the AG has, in terms of the current accounting standards, carried out audits in the year under review where they sampled a number of files across the provinces of SASSA, and based on what they found, they then, in a sense, extrapolated, based on the sample, that a certain number of files in which they couldn't find all the documents intact, accounted for a certain number of, a certain percentage of the beneficiary population, and that the estimate of that amount would come to 10.5 billion rand. That has to do, as I understand it, with the fact that when the AG did that exercise, they found some of the beneficiary files without all the documentation that was supposed to be in place. And that is one of the issues that has, the main issue that has resulted in the qualification of the department's books, in that there was limitation of scope, the AG's office was not favored with all the documents that they needed to have. This is a matter perhaps I hope will be fully conversed when the agency responds to questions relating there to Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. Maybe this one I'm going to ask direct to the agency, SASSA, to check with them on how many beneficiaries are being paid, even though there are no details in the means test on their files.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask Mr. Makatuka, the Grants Administrator, to respond to that question.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. The answer to the question is as follows. The number of missing files in terms of the total population of beneficiaries amounts to 545,076 files. The number of critical missing documents is 159,302. Therefore, the answer to your question is 159,302 missing records on the files.
Thank you. Seeing that this is a challenge for the agency, what measures are being put to pursue to ensure proper systems of controls that will be put in place to clean up the various database on grants?
We have put up a project plan to address the exceptions I have just mentioned. We have done that in consultation with Treasury and also with the Department of Social Development. What we have done, we have set targets for a clear period to ensure that all missing documents are correctly filed in the correct files. We have also embarked on a project to reconstruct all missing files that were never presented for audit purposes. We have also improved supervision at a service point 11. Because some of the problems were caused by lack of supervision at a service point 11. Now we have appointed supervisors at an entry level service office to ensure that all applications are complete and all the required documentation is filed in the correct files. We have also assigned the responsibilities to people to ensure quality assurance at an entry level position, to ensure that no files are brought for filing purposes without any missing critical documents.
Chairperson, with your permission, if I may add, as the new CEO, I've obviously had to look at all the existing programs, and it would be incumbent upon me to actually start strengthening these programs whilst my colleagues talk to the period of time it would take to actually do this reconciliation and deal with the loose correspondence. We will be looking, as I've done previously in another place, with the appeals backlog at getting in particularly EPWP young people to assist us at the wear-off phase and at the registry phase to deal with loose correspondence, such so that to give us the edge, because if you continue at this phase, as you could understand through yourself, it would take us the full period of 3 years. My job would be to accelerate that and cut it by less than half the time. And that would be my commitment to my minister in my performance agreement.
Chair, probably I'm just going to ask one more last question. I'm just not sure whether should I direct it to the department or to SASSA to check on whether CPS is a service provider for the department or for SASSA, to check who has done the terms of reference.
CPS is one of the second and third party payment contractors. I use second and third because we have main payment contractors and then they're also a subcontract to ourselves. There's a service level agreement signed with SASSA in which we currently monitor and evaluate the services of the different contractors.
Chair, maybe it will be a follow-up question on specifically, let me just say the CPS, because it's the one that's dealing with the issuing of grants to the recipients, to check the terms of reference in terms of CPS. How long, I don't know if you do have the terms of reference of in terms of your their contract between you and them, how long are they going, and what is it that SASSA maybe is going to put in place, probably maybe to assist, I mean, in terms of your human capacity, if SASSA will be able to do the work that is being done by CPS currently.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we're currently busy with is a new tender has been currently is out and soon to be concluded in terms of the processes of proposals being submitted for ongoing payment. It is envisaged, and it's one of our key priorities for the future, that SASSA during the next 5 years will evolve an automated system of being the paymaster itself. So that's envisaged over the next 5 years. What we will have is a continued service providing during that period, because we will obviously have to pilot our new approach, look at the automation, and not make mistakes as we've made in other areas when you rush too quickly into automation with more than 14 million beneficiaries. So we're going to conclude a tender for a further 5 years, but we will obviously embark on later this year, by October, if we've done all our processes, because there has to be a certain time for enrollment to whoever gets the tender that is currently available.
Chair, I just want to get the clarity in terms of the CEO, the brand new CEO, saying that they are going to go for a tender. But I just wanted to check in terms of your terms of reference between now or between when the time you appointed CPS to be one of your service provider and to the time when you will be having the new tenders.
does it include CPS, or are you going to have a new service provider altogether? Or I just want to check your terms of references then before their time is going to elapse. Because, Chair, I'm going to ask this question maybe to elaborate a little bit about it. We know that the agency is providing social grants to the people, and CPS also probably employ people to do a job for the agency, no, for them as a service provider. But in one of the issue that government is trying to address is the issue of unemployment, which one appreciates. CPS is employing many young people. But the problem is that the way people are being treated who are working for CPS, it's unfortunately, because they didn't come here today, because they are saying their tenders are being renewed monthly. So that is the reason I was just trying to establish their terms of reference. Thank you.
Perhaps we obviously have a situation that by the end of September this year, the tenders with the current service providers would have come to a close, and by then we should have completed the process of the new tender. At this time, we will see when the tender closes exactly who, because there will be the technical processes of the bid evaluation and the bid adjudication to go through the process of who will tender. Only then will we know. So with CPS and anybody else, up until this time, the current tendered FRA, which is a service level agreement with all these service providers, will end at the end of September.
Okay, thank you. Now, let me give Matladi. Yeah, you are in the program, so.
No, I'm not sure, because I want to ask questions to the department.
I also.
Maybe why don't we deal with SASA first and then come to the department later? Because whatever will ask the department, it's more on the supervisor role and not on the actual administrative work that is done by them. Can't we?
No. Chair, it's exactly on the supervisory role.
Yeah,
that
No. But you are repeating what I'm saying. I'm saying, why don't we deal with SASA first and deal with the actual nitty-gritties of the administration of the grants? And when we're done, then we can come to the department. Please, let's rather have it that way, comrades. We'll come back to the department, they'll talk to them. Right, well, let me hand over to Matlati.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I also would like to refrain from engaging the department and go straight to SASA. The section I'm dealing with is on payables and the issue on the bank overdraft. I'll start with payables. Looking at page 52 of the SASA annual report, we would realize that SASA has had a disclaimer opinion from the Auditor General. And among things that contributed to that disclaimer is the way they are carrying their payables. I was very much unhappy about the 178.1 million that couldn't be accounted for. There was no information, no evidence, no documentation to it. The same on page 52 was the amount of 35.1 million unaccounted for, and the Auditor General couldn't do his work because of lack of information and documents. Now I have questions. The first question is, why did SASSA not have all the information and documents needed for audit purposes?
Chairperson, with your permission, I'll ask Mr. Bacardi, the current CFO of the department, to answer on my behalf, because he was the acting CEO during that period. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I just want to answer the question, because the honourable member is correct to link the findings on the disclaimer. There are actually six areas that were picked up by the Auditor General where huge balances could not be verified. All of them, they are interrelated because they link to the challenges that SASSA faced with regard to the preparation of the financial statement for the year ended 31st March 2010. There are two overarching reasons, Chairperson, that led to the situation. Firstly, SASSA lacked serious expertise and skills to implement the new reporting system, which is required in terms of the PMA. The system requires that they move away from what they reported before in terms of the modified cash basis. Now, that on its own requires specific expertise in the organization in order to carry that task. Now, the second reason was largely due to the time constraints and the hush-hush or rush in implementing the new financial management system, which replaced the previous system that were inherited from government, that is the BAS and LOGIS and TESA. Now, what happened is that most of the balances that the Auditor General picked up from the financials occurred during the conversion of that information from the old system to the new system, which required also the reconciliation or the rewriting of the numbers from the date at which FASA was established. Now, during that huge mammoth assignment, it was only carried out in 1 year, which ordinarily should be a multi-year process to implement. Now, most of the questions, even when we go to the other areas like the bank balance, the inventories, etc., we find that most of the reconciliations were not complete, and that was the time that the Auditor General had to edit the financial statement because of bank time constraints and those capacity problems. The fundamental then reason, therefore, Chair and Honourable Members, is that there was a requirement for a detailed planning as well as a rollout plan that will ensure that over a period of say 2 to 3 years there is stable readiness to implement the new system, to acquire the requisite skills to implement that system. Unfortunately, that was a challenge that faced the organization because they had to implement that system at the time the exemption that was provided by Treasury elapsed, which was a three-year exemption when SASSA was established. Now, that is basically the main core of the problem. Now, I don't know if that's in closing, just to indicate that even it has been possible for the AG to get supporting documentation for those balances, because some of them, when the system conversion took place, there are computer-related entries, there are some accounts, for instance, that needed to be accounted for in a particular fashion, so that they are at the end of the month, they are cleared and so on. But because of the challenges in implementing the system, those balances were in the financial statements and were cleared by the time that the financial statements were completed. That was a fundamental problem.
Very interesting to hear you giving an explanation. But during the time of audit, it was stated very clear that SASSA couldn't know when and how the problem started. But I'm surprised now that you are able to trace and give me the information you've given me, but it is stated in the Auditor General's report that you couldn't even know where to trace back the problem that resulted in this. Now, my other question is about your people that are not experts in their own work. Then my question is, how do you employ people? Don't you employ them based on the duty that they are supposed to do? That would be their line of expertise. How do you employ people and come back and say, I've got staff, but they are not experts in the work that they must perform? Can you explain that one?
Thanks, Honourable Member and through Chair. Yes, indeed, when since the last audit and now, a lot of work has been done to reconcile and trace back all the challenges and errors that were in existence at the time of the audit. Hence, we have identified for each and every balance what was the root cause, and in fact, by now, most of those balances have been reconciled. When it comes to expertise, yes, that was a problem. When I came to ASA, I did a thorough analysis of financial management challenges as well as service delivery challenges. In fact, most of these were put together in a booklet where we've actually identified corrective measures as well. Now, one of the problems that I indicated earlier on is that when we roll out this new system, the first preparation, which is what even National Treasury is doing with the national departments and provincial departments on, is to identify what requisite skills you need in order to roll out an accrual accounting system. Now, SASA had a challenge at the time because it was operating on the cash basis systems of government, and therefore the skills that they had at the time were quite negligible on the modified cash basis of accounting. Now, the problem now, when you move to a different system, you need completely different methodology, you need completely different capacity. That is a challenge now that they face when they move to the new system. Now, what they can do is to say, how do we then going forward to rectify that? Because at this moment, SASA has already moved and converted to the new system. Now, the plan that we have put in place, amongst others, is the recruitment of people who are trained in various accounting firms with the requisite skills in accrual accounting, and simultaneously retraining those people who have little knowledge of accrual accounting, but they have advanced knowledge of cash basis of accounting. So it's that two-pronged approach that now SASA has adopted. Now, over and above that, we realize that we need additional capacity. That's why we actually hired external consulting firm to come on board, an accounting firm to assist with the mentoring and transferring of skills to the existing personnel.
I'm sure you would appreciate the fact that in Scopa we deal with the post-mortem. We don't deal with what you are doing now or what have you done after the audit. If a question comes to say, what measures are in place to address it, well, you can answer. But I'm interested in, at the time when auditing was done, what was your problem? If you could just be there. Because the way we have after would take us somewhere else. I've got another question for you. Why were salary control accounts not clear
maybe
at the end of the year?
No, it's okay.
At the end of the year, after payments were made. So according to SASA, every end of year, instead of their doing salary controls, accounts, they don't do them. Why they didn't do them?
Chairperson, honorable members, I want to say this. There is going to be an interrelation between various balances that were not confirmed by the Auditor General with my inner explanation. The reality of the matter is that reconciliations were not completed because we needed to reconcile over a period of 4 years. Now, the new system also was not properly understood by the people who were implementing it. So those two reasons, Chairperson, are the fundamental cause
I convert to a new system with people who don't have skills, who don't understand the system?
Yes.
And why do it in 1 year when it's supposed to be a multi-year process?
That was actually the root cause.
No, that's fine. I hear that. I'm saying, why did it happen that way?
Well, as you understand, sort of the time was confronted with the question of having to comply with the PSMA because treasury was not trained to a further extent the branching.
But treasury had given you a 3-year exemption.
Yes.
That 3 years was not to loiter around. It was to prepare when that exemption ends. You don't start jumping around when the exemption ends. I mean, it was clear it was for 3 years.
That's the problem that I identified when I joined the chair.
So it's a self-made problem. It's not as if we're a problem that struck like a thunderbolt from the sky. We knew we have an exemption, it's 3 years. At the end of 3 years, this exemption is going to end. We must convert. Nothing was done when the exemption ended. Then we had to try and put some things together. And I suppose that will come back to the department. Supervision, monitoring. You knew there was an exemption for 3 years. 3 years was coming to an end. What was being done to ensure that there is preparation for the end of that exemption? Which preparation will be sure that we don't have what we're having in front of us? Because it's clear, National Treasury did not spring it on you. They said this is for 3 years. So it was 3 years, prepare yourself. Nothing was done. So the problem is not the conversion. The problem is the lack of preparation. That's the long and the short of it.
Yes, that was the diagnosis that I meant when I joined SAFA in media. Now, amongst other things,
No, that's fine.
Yes.
Just note that question. When we come back to the department, we'll probably get an answer. Why was the 3 years allowed to lapse without any preparation being made? And I thought the first question from Matlani raised the issues around insufficient and appropriate evidence. I thought spoke also to the missing files. And I thought your question wanted an answer on why did it happen that some information was missing in the files. How did it come that we have missing files? How did this happen? Why did this happen? I would imagine that for me, unless the Auditor General says something different, that would probably be the root cause of why we have the challenge. I think in the annual report of the department, that 10.5 billion, it's an extrapolation, yes, it is, that's how it is. Lack of documentation, lack of files, why?
Chairperson, there are three main reasons that I can, which I identified when I joined the agency. The massive backlog in filing has accumulated to about 500 plus files that were not in their respective or rightful places at the time of the audit. Now, one of the reasons is that when beneficiaries migrate from one region to another, we pick up that the majority of the files remain in the regions where the beneficiaries resided before, which is one of the problems that resulted in the missing files. The second reason was the fact that the bulk of the staff that was dealing with ground administration were basically in the front end office where they were actually taking applications and doing approvals of applications. And there was a serious shortage of staff at the back office where they
what I identified, because of other pilots that I saw when I joined, was the fact that most of those systems were so operated on a manual basis that you could not be able to have management information and tracking system to track all the applications and ensure that they are properly completed and filed. So most of the interventions, therefore, were trying to address that, Chairperson.
Is that a justification?
Chairperson, given the question you asked earlier, the work that should have been done should have been done in the first 3 or 4 hours after establishing the SASA. Now, the reality of the matter is that their challenges remained there, and there have been massive backlogs, which is part of the things that I said was put into that document that we compiled on identifying all the challenges. The reality of the matter is that we identified those challenges.
But the challenges of filing have been there all along.
Yes, certainly.
So it comes back to the department. The scope for supervision, the parameters, what do they allow us to do, what do they not allow us to do? I think that becomes, because, I don't know, I'm inclined to be a bit reluctant to always suggest that if things are done manually, they are bound to be confused and to be thrown around and all that kind of stuff. Because they're still being done by human beings. If you decide that I want to put these files in this particular order, you should still be able to find the information. So the fact that it's manual should not even feature. Well. But anyway, no, it's fine. I'm sure we'll... Yes, Matladi, you wanted to move to another point. I just wanted us to tie that part that... And I had the gentleman there, I think he's the grant manager. He spoke about the challenges. We didn't have supervisors, we didn't have this and that. So it goes back to the question of management, of leadership. There was none. So people could just do as they... Understanding clicks are upon the 27th, I think. They are registering and re-registering grant recipients. So I hope they will be registering people and they will be filing, or you now have a computerized process. It will not come back 2 years down the line and you'll find that all the files from Clay Corp, they are mixed up and all that kind of stuff.
I'm not sure whether we can then get to the specific detail on the payables and others, but I gave the main core reason that the acting CFO can then zoom into more technical why this balance was not reconciled by this end, why this one accumulated in this session. That's what I was going to if the
No. It makes no difference. I think the fact of the matter is that at the time when the Auditor General wanted the information, it should have reconciled. That it did not reconcile at that time, that is what is wrong. The fact that you are now able to explain it, it's some consolation. But it does not change the fact that it was wrong, that at the time the Auditor General wanted the information, it was not there.
Thank you, Chief. I believe this question I'll be asking has got nothing to do with the new system. The fact that the staff of SASA was authorizing payments without sufficient documentation or supporting documentation. And I would want to find out why.
Chairperson, I'm not sure whether the specific area of payments, is it on the grants or on the table? Thank you, Chair and Matadi. According to our understanding and the report that we have in front of us, there's not any transactions that was paid without any authorization. Because if it was the case, I think it was going to be picked up by the Auditor General. The reasons attached to the payables, as indicated in the report, as my CEO said, they are mainly because of duplicate transactions from the system and incorrect linking of elements in terms of payroll, but we never paid any supplier without any supporting documents to that effect. Thank you.
The page that says so. so that you understand what I'm talking about. I wouldn't just dream it and say it happened. I would like, it's a pity that you don't have what I have, the notes from the AG that states that you paid without supporting documentation. And the question that I have is, why did it happen? But if you argue it, you could still go back and speak to the AG. Because it's a fact that is stated. And then it agrees with what the CEO has been saying of problems of keeping files and documents not being available. And I don't know why you say no when you know that your filing system was poor. I will go on. Chairperson,
where in this note? But Chairperson, I must intercede on behalf of my colleagues because, Chairperson,
yeah,
I'm listening to you. Right. I think it's only fair to expect us as officials to respond to matters that are in the report to which we are privy, rather than matters that are raised in a report that we are not privy to,
which
or notes that are only accessible to members of the committee.
No, no, that's fine.
Which part of page 9? I'm looking at page 9. Which part of page 9?
No, that's fine. Let's leave that one out.
At the end, and then I'll pay because I wrote it here after referring to it.
No, that's fine. I'm just saying let's move on to other issues.
All right.
We'll come back to it.
And I'm happy that the Gemma Gonzela is covering up very closely. I'll move to another question, Chairperson. And then this one, before I refer. My second question, or maybe fourth, is to say, SASSA has been there before. Were you getting this recommendations on the payables from the Auditor General for the first time? And if the answer is no, why haven't you dealt with the matter? Why is it recurring from one financial year to the other? And in addition to it, what can prove that it wouldn't recur next year, next financial year? You've heard it before, you didn't pay attention to it. We are here today, same matter. What proof would we have that in the next financial year we won't be talking about payables? I need your commitment.
Chairperson, the normal thing that happens is that when the issues are picked by the Auditor General, we expect them to put up an action plan to deal with those issues. The members will also appreciate the fact that in the previous financial year, SASSA had an unqualified audit report, which then indicates that the issues that led to the qualification, or even worse, the disclaimer, are actually out of the ordinary and occasioned by the implementation of this and the conversion to these new systems. There is ongoing housekeeping issues the AG will pick up on the internal controls or general management and administration. If they are not that material, then they will raise it with us to rectify without escalating it to the audit report. So my understanding is that these issues came out in this financial year that is under review, an exception rather than the rule, because SASSA had previously in the previous 2 years had an unqualified audit report, which indicates clearly that the real problem was something that happened out of the ordinary, which I explained earlier on in detail, Chairperson.
Okay. Not a qualified audit, but I'm sure there were issues why we have had engagements. So that's qualified and unqualified. It was unqualified, but there were nonetheless substantive issues that required engagement. Yes, Natalie?
Thank you, Chair. I need to underline where I got the issue on lack of documentation and payments from. From the sentence that says, SASSA staff should only effect transactions once the supporting documentation is available. Having said that, there was no supporting documentation, but payments were done. That's when I came up with the question, why would payments be done without supporting documentation?
No, that question is still parked. Go to the next one. Now we will come back to it later. But let's continue.
Thank you, Chair. I think from the side on payables that will be done, I would move to the bank overdraft. The overdraft. Also, we still have the 35.1 million. That couldn't be supported by any documentation or evidence. And also the Auditor General disclaimed it because he couldn't prove anything. I do have this problem of creditors being paid, but not through the bank, by SASSA. That maybe could be explained. Why it was done in that way, that has resulted in the bank balance being understated and the corresponding creditors also being understated. The first question I have is, explain how it happens that payments to creditors would not go through the bank accounts. Does this not constitute gross negligence and ignorance?
Chair, I will, with your permission, ask the acting CFO to explain that detail.
Thank you, Chair, and Mr. Matladi. Bank overdraft of 35 million, just to address the fear from members, is basically about three reasons
attached.
There are three reasons attached to that. Firstly, some of the transactions is because of the validation of the supplier's banking details signed through the bank. That's why it was rejected, did not go through the bank. And then the other one is the validation of the suppliers sell through BankServ. We have about three systems that we are using. It's BankServ and the actual bank of the supplier.
Did you give this explanation to the agent?
They were given, especially on 35, and I'm happy that the AG is here. They were given to the AG. They were questioning the issue of reconciliation relating to 35 million. But the reasons attached to the reasons why 35 million was given to them. Instead, there was no reconciliation. They wanted a recon that ties to 35M, but we were in a position to explain to them.
So there was no reconciliation.
There is no reconciliation. Hence, we are saying, because, as my CEO said, we had a problem with reconciliation for the whole financial year. It impacted negatively in the whole transactions of the agency. But we had reasons for why this 35 million in overdraft. It was provided to the agent. The issue was the reconciliation.
Chairperson, would we say the reasons that you have, that you are so loudly emphasizing, does it allow SASSA as an entity to go against the PSMA regulation. Just because you've got the reason for doing something, does it say now you are scot-free, you can just go without following the PSMA?
There is a very, our experience technically, it's not that we didn't follow the PSMA. We did follow the PSMA. In terms of our operations, if somebody is paid, if we are paying a supplier, it must go through our bank, bank serve through the supplier's bank. Immediately when the money went through the supplier's bank or deposited in the supplier's bank, we can confirm that the supplier has been paid. So in terms of PSMA, it's very clear to say, pay suppliers within certain time frame, and if there's no payment, explain why the supplier was not paid. Unless if the supplier complains to us that they didn't get the payment for the service they rendered, then we didn't comply to PSMA. But in terms of the whole process of 35M, we did comply to PSMA.
All right. Maybe just a minute. Also, General, I'm getting a bit confused. What is the problem with the 35 million? Because, like, FASA is a very good explanation of things.
Mr. Chairperson, I think at the stage of the audit, and I must mention that we only receive financial statements at the 10th of August. So by the 31st of May, there was no financial statement. By the 10th of August, we thought, okay, now we will receive financial statements with all the records. We as auditors, we audit records and evidence, audit evidence. We do not audit reasons. And that was our biggest issue at that stage. They gave us reasons why and why and why. But we said we want the audit evidence so that we can audit the reconciliations of the bank records. It was not done.
That was not evident. Okay. Let's continue.
Thank you very much, AG, for that clarification. I've got the third question. It is very much related to the one I asked on the payables. It is about your internal controls in the finance section. Would you say it is effective? And if it is not effective, what has been done about it?
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. The answer to that question is that during the year under review, there was a serious challenge with regard to internal controls, because internal control environment must be a complete healthiness of the financial situation of the organization. Now, the internal controls that are very important are those that are system-related or system-generated controls, which prevent access to information in the systems, which also provide management information to management to be able to evaluate the veracity of issues that are underlying the balances in the financial information. Now, in this period, Chairperson, as I indicated, this is going to be very much sounding like I'm singing the same song. Whenever the system rolls out, that is incomplete, because some of the modules do not speak to one another. Because if you have a creditors module, it must speak to your general ledger, it must speak to your other balances, not your bank, as it was just indicated, between the payments and the bank balance. Now, those controls were not effective in a sense because of the problems that I indicated. It was quite a massive challenge to implement that system. So the environment overall, you better see it as inadequate, because it is not giving you that level of assurance that there is a complete safety and safeguarding of all the assets and liabilities. So the answer to the question is that the internal control environment, yes, had a serious challenge because of that system challenge.
What are you doing about an ineffective unit of your financials?
Chair, there are further plans that the NGO will roll out, but in the meantime, we have identified the key governance issues that need to be addressed. Firstly, as you know, the DG has spoken about the general accountability as well. We have already initiated the process of joint audit committees, where the presentation by SASA is presented to the audit committee of both organizations, that is DFD and SASA. The entire audit function is also building up its capacity in terms of the compliance function that deals with issues relating to crime and fraud, but also the internal audit capacity to ensure that they continue to monitor the financial management controls in the agency. Certainly, the issue of recruitment is underway. There is a number of people who have already been interviewed and appointed who have or who possess the necessary skills required for an accrual accounting function. Certainly, there is the company that is already engaged to transfer skills and also assist the finance unit to understand their function.
For how long?
It was a process to the chairperson, and part of the SLA in actually focusing on the issue of the transfer of skills. There's already a good ground that has been put on the ground, including, which is very much important, ensuring that the business support center, because now we're operating on a completely new system, we're no longer supported by SETA, which supports the entire government. So we have established a business support center, and that is critical for ongoing oversight in terms of system-related challenges on all of them. So there is a multi-pronged approach to deal with this, but I'm sure the new CEO will be able to monitor the implementation of that plan going forward, Chairperson.
Okay.
Last question is to say, what is the cost that would be incurring in the consultants as they are doing the work that you say of training the financial staff?
To correct the wrong that I do, it does require some element of investment. The current contract is estimated at about 15 million over 12 months.
So the do nothing for that 3 years exemption is costing us 15 million. That's the cost of not preparing for the conversion. Well, it's not a question, it's an observation. My point remains that if we had used that 3 years of exemption to prepare, we would not be having this company that we're having there, which is costing us 15 million. That's why I'm saying the lack of preparation for the convention, which then requires us to get external assistance, is that cost. It's just a statement, because that's what is there. I just want to check with my lady. You're done.
Except the one that was parked.
Yeah, no. We'll come back to it. I'm trying to check on time. We have exactly 2 hours. So we need to manage time somehow. Mamangena. And then after Mamangena, it's Kumbedroy.
Chairperson, I'm trying to ask myself a question in my head, and really I can't get it. Maybe they will help me. SASA, does it report to the department? Let's say the Auditor General is coming. After whatever they have done, do they carry their papers to the auditor, to the department first, and then show the department, and then they hand that over to the Auditor General? That's what I want to find out. I don't know.
No, that's fine. The procedural thing, Mama, don't say. She'll be so weird.
I beg your pardon, Chairperson. I was conferring with the minister on a matter.
Can you repeat the question?
You talk to the minister in
your
office. The question is,
I'm looking at this issue of the clinics, where the clinics will take their reports maybe to the hospital, and then the hospital will take it to the province, and then the province will do everything together with the auditor general. Now, I wanted to find out, does SASSA do the same with you? They bring the papers to you, and then the auditor general looks them from your department, or they go straight to SASSA and ask for those documents. Thank you.
SASSA is a Schedule 3A entity with a chief executive officer. So they interact with SASSA directly. SASSA has its own audit committee. It's got its own financials that are separate from us. So they interact with them directly. That's why they're able to pronounce an opinion on the financials of SASSA, separate from those of the department.
Okay. Right. Right. Comrade Roy.
In the absence of comment of the journey, I shall do my utmost best. And I won't repeat what Ms. Majladi has asked, because I think some of the reasons behind the disclaimers I'm dealing with the two disclaimers on page 53 of your annual report, the receivables and the inventory. See, I strongly suspect that the reasons for those two disclaimers are very much the same as the ones uncovered by Ms. Matladi. They are a lack of capacity, they are this financial management system which we are not able to get into gear, they are problems with filing our documentation. But let me just, I want to perhaps be more specific on some of the reasons given. So you have said that SASSA loitered for 3 years in implementing this new financial system, from the cash-based to the accrual-based. No, man, I would suggest they waited 12 years, because you see, they were established in 1999. In 1999, as the DG just said, as a 3A public entity. Now, public entities, like SASSA, are required to prepare their financial statements according to a crude accounting system. So check in 1999, they knew, look guys, around the corner sometime, we have got to implement this particular kind of system. So they didn't write it for 3 years. Someone is guilty of serious dereliction of duty, because they have wasted since 1999. And that is why I had my hand up earlier on. I wanted to ask the DG about oversight. And so I want to part this. The question I'm now asking, I want to know why those 12 years were wasted, and I want part of the answer from SASSA, but perhaps share a major part of the answer from the DG of the department, because he must oversee this particular entity. Listening to the discussion earlier on,
let's say, Comrade, that question, let's park it.
Okay.
Take it to the DG. Whether it was 12 years or 3 years or 2 years, it doesn't matter. The principle stays.
It seems that this new system, this new financial system, was implemented without a pilot project. It was simply rolled out all over the country. Am I right? Number one. Number two, we've heard it was rolled out with a total lack of capacity. At all, no proper numbers of school staff to implement the system. I'm correct, I believe. I was not really responsible for that. Who took those decisions? And were there not an alternative decision to suddenly, overnight, rolling out this new system with no pilot project, with none, we have no skilled staff to do it? Could you have not gone another route? Because this route has led you into a disclaimer, assessor, and to a qualification of the department. So, Chair, who was responsible for going ahead in gambling? Let's just implement the system. Who is responsible? What action was taken against those people? Was there not an alternative route of doing the thing?
Yep. Who was responsible? And what has happened subsequently to these people?
Chairperson, SASSA being a public entity, the final responsibility on such investment decisions is that of an accounting authority.
where there is no board, then it becomes the CEO who takes that final decision on such matters. I'm not sure that I need to...
Any action taken against that CEO? Very serious dereliction of duty. Any action taken against him or her at the time, whoever that person was?
I'm not sure whether the DG can accept that, Chair, as I understand, he was relieved of his duties.
As a consequence of this or because of other things? It's happening as a consequence of this, outside any other issues that might have been there.
Chairperson, the Chief Executive Officer at the material time was relieved of his duties for different reasons. These matters we're talking about regarding the introduction of the new system came up at the time when he was already on special leave in the period leading to him being relieved of his duties. So he would not have been placed in a position where he would have had to answer questions relating to the introduction of the system at that time.
Fine. Then who was responsible? Who took the decision to move ahead with the convention under the circumstances?
Somebody must have taken the decision, or a group of people must have said, look, we don't have the skilled staff, we are not going to have a pilot project, we're simply going to go roll out overnight this very complicated system, we are going to gamble with the Auditor General's opinion of what we are doing, and went ahead anyway. Who are those persons, and what action was taken against those people? Where does the responsibility lie? I'm trying to establish, I think I know the answer. No action was taken against anybody. I want
no.
to
come
and say that.
No, we don't know the answer.
So, I'm not certain if I understand what the question is.
let me amplify. The CEO who has been relieved of his duties for other reasons,
yeah.
You say he was on special leave at that time. Who was running SASA?
Perhaps I should say that I think there are two questions.
No, let's tell me the one I'm amplifying. We'll come to that point.
Chairperson, if you give me a chance, you will perhaps see the import of the point I'm trying to make. When I say that, two questions. There's a question relating to what happened to the person. The first question, perhaps, is who was the chief executive officer at the time when a decision to roll out the system was taken? I'll say he's the previous CEO. And no one can take a decision of that kind other than the chief executive officer. It could be on the advice of the chief finance officer or otherwise. No one in an organization would take a decision such as that other than the CEO. Then the next question is, what happened as a consequence of the failures of the system? Then the second part that I related to was that when this issue arose, that CEO who made the decision at that time was already on special leave in the period leading to the termination of his services. I hope that clarifies my answer, Chairperson.
Yeah, no, it does.
All right.
So in relation to these matters, no action was taken specifically in relation to these matters. That's the long and the short of it.
That's what I suspected. Chief, but the entity, SASA, seems to have an enormous capacity problem. I think that's part of the problem. Not being able to roll out the system effectively because you don't have the skilled personnel. All the documentation we've heard is missing and misfiled. You seem to have an enormous capacity problem. Can they give us some kind of indication perhaps what the vacancy rate is at the department, in the entity? Earlier on, somebody made reference
to
a recruitment drive.
If in relation to receivable and inventory, you feel we'll get a repeat of the answers that we've got,
yeah.
Can I maybe give Honorable Steele, and then when it's done, then we can come back to questions that are a little broader,
okay.
So that he should have done his part. Then we can then maybe go back to some of those earlier questions that would maybe try to clarify
the relationship between the entity and the department and where the gaps are and how we think maybe these gaps might need to be closed.
And I hope you don't lose sight of the fact that several of us are asking questions about the oversight role of the department, the relationship between the department and SASA.
Sure.
It seems to me very remote. But let us not
get that. I want Steele to do his part, and then we can come back to that.
But before Mr. Steele, can I just ask one or two questions specific to receivables and inventory?
Okay.
Well, let's start with inventory, in particular inventory. Can you please turn to a page in the annual report? If you can please turn to page 77. There at the very bottom, and note 6 gives your details. Well, not much detail, it's one line on inventories. But what does not escape my attention there is the huge difference between the 2009 figure, Chair, and the 2010 figure. Can you give some explanation under this item why we have a quadrupling almost, I think, of the 6-odd million from 2009, which increases dramatically fourfold to 24 million in 2010? Is that an error?
Thank you, Chair. It is an error. There was two issues around the error.
Comrade, you said you read an error, and indeed you say it's an error. Is that seriously an error?
Yes, I just want to explain what means us to disclose the 24. By then, due to the fact that the system was implemented late, I think we explained when we opened. Sorry. When we started with the hearing that the same module that we are talking about in terms of inventory was implemented late in April 2010. And we didn't have enough time to check the correctness and the accuracy of the information on inventory. Take into account that in terms of the process of inventory, there must be stock counts that must be done that has to tally to the information captured into the system. And that did not happen. It goes back to the issue of reconciliations, which we have been talking about. The reconciliation in terms of what we have physical stock against what we have in the system was not completed by then, because the same module, which is inventory module, was implemented late. Now, it amounted
but
to...
But you knowingly went ahead and prepared financial statements on the basis of knowing that this thing is incorrect, knowing it's an error.
Yeah. We did not until when we, this current financial year, when we go deeper because of the AG's audit query, when we go back to the figures, realizing that it was overstated. It was overstated because in the current financial year, it went down to 14 from 24. So that means there was overstatement of 10 million, and there are reasons attached to that when we are preparing the financial statement for the year 2010-11.
Are there any other errors of a similar kind in your financial reports? Let's take the other item I'm dealing with, note 7, trade and other receivables. Again, there, a pretty large increase from 63 million in 2009 to 86 in 2010. Is there an error there as well?
So the figures at the bottom, provision for impairment.
Massive, yes. From 2 million to 31 million. That just also does not seem correct.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. There was also overstatement because after the...
Is that an error?
There was an overstatement.
Is it an error?
Yes. Overstatement is like an error.
Okay. I don't want to be tedious and go note by note. Can you point out all the errors in your financial statements? Not in great detail, but just say under that particular item it is wrong, under that particular item it is wrong, and give us an indication to what extent your financial statements are not worth the paper they're written on.
Thank you, Chair. Just to explain to the House, majority of items that we had overstatements and understatements in the prior financial year is basically around the issue that we have highlighted when we started, late implementation of other modules and poor planning in terms of rollout of the system.
Chair,
which
I want to know to what extent these financial statements are incorrect. We've now discovered in two items I've dealt with, items 6 and 7, there are errors. Just simply say, out of all the other, I don't know, 14, 15 notes,
Five are errors, 10 are errors,
they're all errors, they're all wrong. Just give an indication.
Okay. There were about under inventory, there was an error overstatement, it was 24.
Just
under investigation, it went to 14 million.
Okay,
Maybe we must be methodical. Let us start with 74.
Comrade, just a minute. I wanted to say maybe what can help us if you can say note 6 or note 7 so they were able to quickly follow where you are.
Okay, I have a counter suggestion. If we start on page 74 and we go note by note, right or wrong, just give us, say it's an error or it's not an error. Note 3, property, plant, and equipment, is that correct or is it an error? And the annual report on page 74.
Understatement, because it was 399M, it went to 408 after investigation.
There's an error.
Yes.
Four intangible assets?
Yes, there was an error.
Five financial assets by category? Leases?
Yeah, the need to PPE is an error.
Six is an error. Seven is an error. Eight repayments?
There was an error.
Nine financial lease obligations?
There was an error. We had to do some calculation, recalculation.
Ten cash and cash equivalents?
Also, error.
Provisions? 12.
Error.
Trade and other payables? 13.
Error.
14 financial liabilities by category?
No.
No. But any other errors in the rest of them?
Those are the major errors that we have in terms of the financial
statement. Commitments? You jumped 11.
I'm sorry.
No.
So what do we make of these financial statements? They honestly, I said tongue in cheek, but I'm not saying it seriously. They're not really worth the paper they're written on. I mean, they help us absolutely. Do not help us. Why did you not notify this committee perhaps in writing that, look, we've tabled the annual report, there's the annual report, but please tear up the financial statements, they're all inaccurate. Did you not do that?
I think I don't really correspond to that, but I think the reason why the AG came out with the opinion of it.
Not the AG, it was
after the financial audited, and then that's the reason why we did receive the case.
You tabled this report before Parliament. Have you let the Speaker of Parliament know that a large part of this, the most important sections of this report are your financial statements? Have you let the Speaker of Parliament know that these financial statements are completely inaccurate and must be disregarded? If you didn't let this committee know, if you didn't let your portfolio committee know, then you must let the Speaker of Parliament know that the report tabled is completely inaccurate. And we cannot take these financial statements seriously. Did you not do that? Take none of those steps.
I can say that NRM, the acting CFO, has indicated that the magnitude of the error was only established following further reconciliations. Yes, the obligation to compile correct and accurate financial statements rests with management, especially the accounting officer. However, the committee should take into cognizance the fact that this can only be possible within certain parameters. Among other things, that you have financial management systems that are reliable, which will then produce reliable information. Part of the challenges, Chair, indicated is the lack of capacity and skills. The committee will be aware that, as we speak, we have our CFO on suspension. Now, we are looking at getting the requisite skills so that in future this matter is not repeated. I'm not sure that the committee is eager to know why certain things did not happen, but in order for us to get an understanding as management, we rely on the information provided by the financial officer, which is the CFO. Every time we understand that he has not been able to compile that, give up that assurance as the cause of those magnitude problems relating to systems. So, in a sense, Chairperson, there is no intention to either submit incorrect information. It was premised on the understanding that the figures were correct, only to discover once all the components of the system were in place, all the modules were implemented, then these things came out. That, Chairperson, is unfortunately the reality.
Okay. All right. I will rest my case. I'm sure the reasons for why there are errors are very logical, are very sound. I'm sure those reasons are very good. But my complaint is, Chair, that we have not been notified. That you have a report table before Parliament, and you know it is full of errors, your financial statements are not correct, we should be notified, or Parliament should be notified. It's just not good enough. That these things are tabled, there's no errata, there's no explanation. And one almost gets the suspicion that you simply assume that we will not read these things, we will not understand them, we will not pick up these errors. And really, I must protest that this should not happen again.
Well, I think I want to give Honourable Steele space to say that once a report is a disclaimer, Comrade Roy, it raises the very serious possibilities that there will be or there are errors, because you can't reliably confirm certain figures, or you have no supporting documents that would confirm certain figures. So I would imagine that those totals will be corrected formally in the next annual report that comes to Parliament. So I think that's how it will be handled. That's how it should be handled. Honourable Steele?
Thank you, Chair. It's been quite a depressing experience watching the red-hot ball of accountability being tossed around on the other side of the room between the department and SAFA. And I think that we are going to have to go back to where we started and remind everybody that while SAFA has had a disclaimer, the department has had a qualified audit precisely because of the problems in SAFA. And if you look at the reasons for the qualification in the department, they relate directly to the failures of SASA to actually account for the money that has been transferred to them. So we cannot pretend that this is not joint accountability and joint responsibility, and that's why we need to go back to the department, please, Chair, at the end. Another question, Chair, which I'd just like to park for the moment, relates to the matter which Honourable Ainsley got in reply to his question, and that is precisely what has happened to the former CFO. I would like to know what investigation is underway into what happened to the former CFO who has been suspended. I would like to know what is the role of the SIU in this investigation, if any. And I think these are issues that we need to explore in great detail with SAFA so that we can find out exactly what is going on at a forensic level and in terms of possible prosecution. In terms of those investigations. But, Chair, I'd like to start with the matter of the accumulated deficit, which on page 56 is stated at 884 million. Which has increased from 393 million in 2009. So let's just start with the sheer magnitude and the increase in the accumulated deficit, and ask why is SASA still in business if this is the way that they conduct their business. This accumulated deficit of 884 million, as reported
on page 56. It's increased from 393 million. Why is SASSA still in business?
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The main reason for the deficit were largely due to the commitments that were incurred by SASSA over the years, which were brought into the books during the year under review when they converted to the accrual accounting system. Now, that on its own is not necessarily the reason for the deficit. The reason for the deficit is purely, as we understand it, due to the fact that there were some challenges or inefficiencies with regard to managing their own budgets at the time. Now,
can we stop there and please just rewind a little bit and go back to the point that you were making about they took on certain what from the past? Certain obligations.
The commitments that I mentioned.
We hear about these commitments.
Which Chairperson, when you report on the cash basis of accounting, you don't bring necessarily into your income statement, that is, in your financials. Now, when you bring them into the account, then they will increase your liability in the books. But also, there were other commitments that were informed by the establishment processes as SASSA was establishing throughout the country. Now, the three issues that took place to address that. One is to implement the austerity measures, and secondly is to deal with the question of handling fees, because that was also the major escalation of cost area, that is the major cost driver, which over the 2 years that we have been renegotiating those contracts, we managed to save just about 500 million in that area alone. So I always speak, the average cost of 750 annual is about 2.4 billion. So it's coming down from 2.1 billion over the years. So
the explanation is going too far.
Okay.
Can we please share what are these handling fees and how have you been able to reduce them?
The handling fee is the money that we pay to the cash payment contractors to distribute cash or to transfer money.
What is the job that you're actually supposed to do?
Well, if SASSA had internal capacity in that you would be able to do it, but this is what the CEO was talking about, that over the next 5 years there will then be a strategy to develop that capacity so that SASSA will become a paymaster general. But in the meantime, what we have been dealing with is to say how best can we rework those contracts to ensure that they are more favorable to government. Because some have inherited a very unfavorable contracts that were run by the provinces. So that is the long-term strategy. That's why there is a tender now to get rid completely of those old contracts so that we have a new dispensation.
Okay. Just remind,
please, whoever has his phone or her phone on, please switch it off. It affects the recording of this proceeding. Please. Yes, continue.
Chair, could I just remind the officials that on page 44 of the report, it states in the accounting officer's section of the report that SASSA was established to administer, manage, and pay social grants. That's what it was established to do, to administer, manage, and pay social grants. Now we're hearing that it has to save 5 billion. Because it doesn't have the capacity to pay itself. Yet it was established to administer, manage, and pay social grants itself. So we have an agency that by its own admission does not and has never had the capacity to actually do that which was it was established to do. That's what we are being told.
Chairperson, perhaps I understand that it's a temple.
I think, the simple question is yes, not yet. That's why we're saying in 5 years' time we want to do exactly what is reading on page 44. Not there yet. That's a simple position. Whatever the reasons, that's another point. But fact is, yes, Plaza is not dispersing crowds. That's why they have contracted people, and that's why in 5 years' time they will have that capacity to do it.
Right, then, Chair, can we go to the detail, please, of the accumulated deficit, and specifically the 13.7 million of this accumulated deficit that the AG could not find complete and accurate records for? Can we have some explanation as to that? And then following on from that, can we look at the issue of intangible assets? Sorry, I need to look at that separately. Can we first deal with the matter of the 13.7 million of the accumulated deficit?
Okay, just to explain the 13.7M as indicated by the AG, the major reasons attached to that is that we have two accounts, just to explain to the members. This relates to all assets that were supposed to be captured when we did our financials from 2006 when SASA started up to 2010. We didn't manage to capture those assets due to the volume of the work that we had. Some of the assets were not captured by then when we prepared the financials. And the AG picked up some of the assets that was lying on the floor, not tallying to the asset register by then. So these assets had to be recaptured into the system. And we are using two accounts to do that. There's an account called asset clearing account. It's like a holding account. Immediately when we have processed these assets, they are now taken to the relevant account, which is asset account. Now, the challenge that we had, which related to the 13.7, it was because of the trial balance extract that was provided to AG. For the simple reason that the trial balance that was provided to the AG was dated the 2nd of June, while there was another trial balance which was provided to the final trial balance which was tied into to the AFS, which was later. Obviously, because of the timing, the figures changed in between. The amount that was provided firstly to the AG was amounting to 564. The latest one was 578, which resulted in the difference of 13.7M. Hence, we had the challenge of the AG picked up the 13.7, which was the difference.
Thank you, Chair. Those are words that I hope we will never hear in this committee ever again from any officials. There were assets lying on the floor that weren't captured. Those are your words, sir. I hope we never get to hear them ever again, because that is not the way to manage public assets. Chair, can we move these to the intangible assets? And first of all, I believe that according to note 4, these relate to...
Are we hopefully not ever going to hear those kind of words again around asset management? I'm really raising the point because, I mean, look, it creates a picture of casualness, you know. Your managers at the various levels, it's no management, there's no monitoring, there's no supervision. So,
as a CEO, I need to give the commitment that that will never be a statement from this agency. In fact, all barcoded, and that's the process for assets, as they come in, we have to do that. I do know that we are dealing with some backlogs, but this is in the local offices. We are, in fact, and the audit will reveal how far we've come. We've actually taken care of the asset and the taxpayers' money. So I invite you, that's my guess.
Good.
Thank you very much for that, Chair, and thank you for the CEO.
Well, unfortunately, because this committee has long memories, apology to that, so please let's not ever have that being repeated. Chair, can we move then to the intangible assets? And as I said, I believe this relates to computer software. I'd just like to know, first of all, what is the accounting policy when it comes to the valuation of computer software? I see it's recorded as an intangible asset, but I do not personally understand how software can actually have a value. I don't understand what policies are being applied to the valuation of software such that it can be given a value, what is its depreciation, etc. And then, more specifically, where is the $32.7 million relating to the software and why is it a problem?
In terms of the applicable standards, in terms of TRAC, there's a clear definition in terms of intangible assets and how to calculate them. Also, it's supported by National Treasury Directives. The reason why we have the issue around intangible assets was basically the example was provided to AG, but AG still insisted that they think the still some of the intangible assets that was not disclosed. And hence it resulted in understatement of the intangible assets. That was only picked up.
Hold on, let's check with the Auditor General. Because I assume auditing is a bit scientific than just to think. We think there are some assets that are not disclosed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I think it is a very difficult subject to handle, but at that stage when we audited, the Oracle system that they have implemented, I think, was also not part of that asset at that stage. So that is why we said we don't think the intangible assets is correctly valued at that stage. I can maybe be wrong, but I think that is the short of it. That all the computer software that I've implemented or had on hand was not valued at the correct value.
Okay. So there was an understatement of the assets, and the AG was not able to verify your assessment. Is that correct?
It is correct. As we indicated, the info was submitted, but they only picked up that there was some development cost in relation to intangible assets, which was not included in terms of our intangible assets.
Sorry, and SASA bore the costs of those development costs, is that correct?
Definitely, yes.
And that should have been brought onto the books in terms of the GRAP directives.
Yes.
Which then it sounds as though the SASA in this instance does have a handle on what needs to be done going forward. And I think that we can simply assume that in future this will not be a problem.
I think so. I'm thinking.
All right, like the AG, we're all thinking. Chair, I'm going to leave it at that point, but there are a number of... there is a general question, which I parked, relating to the suspended CFO and the role of the SIU, which I would like to get some clarity on. And then I also have like to come back later with some general questions for the department, if I could. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe let's talk to your first two questions, the CFO and the SIU. You can just briefly talk to them. And then we could then come back to, I see, Spit, you haven't said a word today. Ah, okay, that's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the suspended CFO, we commenced with the disciplinary hearing after completing the charge sheet on the 1st of June. During that session, the suspended CFO requested legal assistance, which he then
report to the meeting. We will resume this matter on the 16th of July, and we will then keep Minister and yourselves appraised of the outcome of the hearing, but it still has to be conducted within the set period, but it resumes on the 16th of July, the hearing.
Yeah, and the FIU, we know you...
At this moment, the charges relate to management and expenditure without proper clearance within SASSA. There is no FIU connection to the suspended CFR.
I think the question was not connected to... On the FIU is not connected to the CFR. That's the case. That is the sense. No, SASSA had engaged the SIU. Are they still engaged?
Yes.
What are they doing? Are we making some progress?
In terms of the SIU, we have a relationship dating back to 2005. We've reported regularly and have, through ministers, through questions and to yourself, the amount of cases. I am supported by my colleague who will be up to date with more recent developments, but safe to say, I am reviewing the agreement with the SIU. We need to have a continued relationship, but also build the capacity on other levels to be more effective on the ground where the risk is a lot higher. That we start building the capacity within SASSA to not just monitor and evaluate as we do our work, I take on, but also look deeper into the capacity to use IT forensic specialists in tracking the system to pick up the fraud and the connectivity. But I will ask Honey if she will please inform the committee of what the case is up to date and what the conviction rate is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO, and through you, Chair. The cases, I'm not sure whether what is required of the accumulated numbers from the start of the project, which stood at 15,238 people brought before the court as at the end of March 2010, and the number of cases finalized by the court stood at 14,325. 13,145 people were convicted. And up to March 2010, we had signed up 34,382,000 people for acknowledgement of debts, valued at 191.3 million rands, which sought us to benefit. Thank you.
Chair, can we have those figures supplied to the committee in written form?
Okay.
Right. Let's move to the general. And of course, to thank you for using the SIU. It's a public entity, for God's sake, and I don't understand why it is not utilized, and yet it is cheaper and has more benefits than. I'm not touting for them, but I'm just saying. Public must be kept public. That's how it's supposed to be. It's cheaper and more cost effective. I'll talk for them. Alright. Victorious comrade, I don't know, before you let me give long for the case at hand because he has not spoken. Then I'll come back to you, comrade John. Yes, Victorious?
So we're on the general now. I've got one question to the minister or the department, but I'll park that one and stick to the questions to SASSA at the moment. I had made the very same remark to my colleague here. I've questioned whether these statements are worth the papers written on, because I really battled to understand what's in this document. If I compare it with last year's document, which is a wonderfully easy to understand document, this one is. I'm not sure whether it's the consequence of the new accrual system or whether it's the consequence of just bad reporting, and I hope it's the latter. For example, the table goods and services, which we normally refer to very quickly in our discussions here, doesn't feature here. The closest I can get to a goods and services document is the reference on page 93. But that those figures are really informal figures, because the Auditor General on page 53 has said that he hasn't looked at these figures. They were probably not, doesn't have much value. So it's very difficult to compare expenditure, operating expenditure with the previous year. I've tried to do it, but it becomes almost impossible. But let me refer to the question that my colleague here spoke about at length, the transition from cash system to the accrual system. And we heard the response from the department, from SASA, that it's linked to lack of expertise, lack of capacity within the department. But let me refer them to last year's report. And this is the report by SASA itself. I'm referring to the sub-program of the Chief Financial Officer. The sub-program is called Systems and Internal Control. The output is full implementation of the accounting systems. The performance measure indicator is the percentage implementation of the accounting system. The target for the year was 100% implementation of the accounting system at head office and regions. And the actual achievement says all managers in finance have been trained on accrual accounting. Now, either it is very, very bad training, or you've got incompetent managers, because you couldn't actually implement what was said here. And I would like a response on that. How many people were actually trained on the system, and whether they felt after the training that they could do the job? And then why are we sitting with this quality of report that we're sitting here with today? That would be my question about the accrual system.
No, that's fine. Let's then respond to, then you continue. We had staff that were trained. Let me start by saying all the previous accounting policies have to be revisited to align them with the new accrual accounting. But basically, you see in the finances, you write with the observation. When you report on the cash basis, it's a little bit different. In fact, it's quite different from what you see when you report on the accrual accounting. What in this financial year auditors, we did, which you see on page 93, is also to reflect the reconciliation between the two, the implication of moving to the new reporting system from the previous one. Now, we had in situations, it's a pity I don't have statistics here, of people who are sent on training and we are sent to retraining again. Yes, the challenge is that in some instances you find that those people, in the absence of a better word, you are untrainable. Now, we're looking at a strategy then going forward of on the restructuring exercise to redeploy some of those people to other areas and recruit the relevant people to do the work under the accrual accounting system. This is why I was saying there is a multi-pronged approach, because the SAT was on finance to do a scale audit under the finance unit. Well, that's going to be broader, implemented across SASA, as I understood them, but the new CEO might have something to put up. The work on the finance staff was started to look at the scale audit thoroughly with same head office and with all the regional offices. That will give us an exact understanding of the kind of approaches that we follow. But in the meantime, ongoing training is happening in the specific areas like in your payables, in your salaries, administration, etc.
Alright. So the issue is not so much the conversion to the new system, and that with employees with very low skills. Because I don't want to repeat that word, because it might not come across gentle to those people, but fact of the matter is that we had people of such low skills that their ability to adapt to new and higher systems was severely constrained. So our main problem is not the convention per se to a new system. It comes back to the people that we had. These were people who were as bright as things. They could have easily understood the new convention and could have done a better job. Because if they were trained and they were sent for retraining, but still this is what they can deliver.
So it is not the problem is not the system, but the people who have.
Chair, I'm not sure that it would be entirely fair to assign the blame on the people. Remember, the conversion process is, as I indicated, is a massive task that requires a multi-pronged strategy that needs a multi-year run-out. So the part that relates to people is not necessarily everybody that we identify for the training. But all I'm saying is that these are the challenges that we've picked up in actually looking at how can we address the challenges that SASSA was facing in running out the new system. Yes, we are saying that there is a need for new skills that must be brought in or brought on board. But some of the staff have been trained as quite doing well. In fact, they have been able to do certain things that they have been doing differently under the cash basis of accounting. We are not going to be fair to them if we generalize and say everybody is untrainable.
No, that's fine. I think we're together. In a class of 100, even if the whole class does not perform optimally, you will still look at Vasco da Gama. They are relegated, but they're good players, man. As that is a collective, they just can't keep up, you know, to the PFM. So yes, there will be those exceptions, but if we have a category within those officials who are not even trainable, it then raises the question around how people get to be put into position. That's why you're talking about maybe shifting people and getting new skills. I'm just saying that element does need to be given some level of recognition and not the system perfect.
Pretoria? Chair, the question that flows from that is, what is the current situation? Are you confident that with ongoing training and bringing in of new expertise that you are able this year to avoid the situation which you had last year?
If clarity is the year, the financial year that's just complete, because we're discussing the one before. But the current situation as we stand is that we are, obviously we have the first report on financial staff. We need to implement the decisions. I've also said that I will concentrate my energies on appointing, because there's also too many staff at various levels, which are at the incorrect level, that we need to look at the core face of our organization first to see that we have the best people to present us there. Because it's the mistakes that people make at the lowest end, which is actually the front of the business, that escalates up to the head office level. So finance officials will be one that we will procure. The rest of the officials, we will look at the training program set for them, but also look at the value chain in SASSA in the applications process, where people need to be with various. Some need to have some accounting skills, even within that value chain, to put them there with those skills, but to look for people with accrual skills specifically within the regions, not just at head office, because head office is now set to deliver.
Okay, all right. Your last question, Pretoria?
Last of the set, then I want another one on the general. This is my very last question.
All right, your last on SASSA, my
last on SASSA, but just for clarity purposes, we spoke about the overdraft, and I think the Auditor General mentioned a figure of 357 million. That's also reflected in the figure somewhere. But in the report on page 26, a figure of 1 billion rand is mentioned as overdraft. I'm trying to bring the two together, which is the correct one. Page 26 reference is made in the middle column of the agency then developed a turnaround strategy to deal with an approximate 1 billion rand overdraft. Even if that was the previous year, it's not quite correct, because the previous year's statement refers to a figure of just over 400 million. So I want to know, where does the 1 billion rand overdraft come from? Page 26, the center column.
It's on line 4.
That's actually an error, Chairperson, because the 1 billion is the deficit. The overdraft is different from the deficit, the actual cash in the bank. the reference bill should have been the deficit, sir.
Torres, can you check last year's final report? Because I do think that last year we spoke about a bank overdraft. So this might not be wrong, but can you, as you already do, go through last year's report and see if, whilst we go on to the other questions, the one of the department will come back to you. But I do remember that there was, in last year's engagement, a talk about an overdraft. So this, let's park this one. It's not necessarily the wrong. See?
Thank you, Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues. Yeah, this question, I think, is directed both at SASSA and the department. And I think following up on colleague Pretorius there, if you see on page 44, there's an operating deficit that SASSA is working under of some 453 million rand. Plus finance costs, and it comes to 490.8 million rand. Page
4.15.
So you're operating at a deficit. Now, also note that on page 26, which colleague Pretorius has referred to, that there are some bilateral arrangements between National Treasury and yourself with regard to operating deficits, because the PFMA is quite clear that you cannot, a public entity cannot budget for a deficit. That's section 53, brackets 3. Now, what I'd like to know, what are those arrangements, and then what is the department doing to relieve SASSA of the challenges that they have enunciated here on page 44 in detail?
Yes, can you check the cellular phone and just switch it off? Okay.
So that's my first question. When are these challenges going to be overcome and met by the department with the help of National Treasury? Secondly, now, SASSA is an agency of the department. Does the department have a service level agreement with SASSA? And what are the terms and conditions, specific terms and conditions of the service level agreement? Because I think in all the answers we've been receiving here, we are being told it's not our responsibility, it's theirs. They are a public entity. They operate on their own. So I just like to know, surely there must be a service level agreement, because they are an agency of the department. They're not just like some other public entity out there, ESCOM or something like that. They are an agency of this department. And lastly, it might be subjective to them, but I think it's relevant to us. How would both the department and SASSA rate their budget management in terms of internal controls and things like that? You said you're making some progress now. Can you give us a rating of this financial year, the one we're looking at under review, and now? How would you rate your capacity to manage your own budget and manage public funds?
Chair, can I answer the last question relating to budget management? Well, I would say there has been significant improvement. If you look at the new financial year, which is 10-11, you pick up. In fact, even in this one, on 9-10, you will be able to pick up on the numbers, but there has been a difference, quite a significant positive numbers on the deficit for the year. Now, we have now, as we speak, projected an administration budget to realize a saving of about 500 million. The bulk of that was occasioned by the renegotiation of the contracts and the funding on the handling fee. But also the austerity measures that were implemented actually assisted them. The bigger challenge of budget management is the level of decisions when it comes to investment decisions, when it comes to commitments that have been made to the organization. We have reviewed most of the contracts and renegotiated some to start some of those savings. So we kind of ensure that there is a grand strategy to deal with that. That is why we have many commitments and travel over you mentioned about the big challenge on irregular expenditure, which was managed to cut quite significantly, I think from 69 million in this year under review, we were just below 3 million. The only thing that has been renewed was relating to an old contract which was committed in the previous years. It's just a writing off of those balances that were indicated as a contract in one of the regions, the Northwest, for HP and a computer contract. So there has been tight controls on the expenditure management as well as ensuring adherence to financial management policies, Chair. I leave the issues related to the department for maybe the DG to assist me there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Member, we do sign a service level agreement with the South African Social Security Agency on an annual basis. And that service level agreement sets out the roles and responsibilities of the parties. Our responsibility is to continue formulating clear policies and providing oversight and support to the agency. The agency's responsibility is to manage, administer, and ensure the payment of social grants. That service level agreement goes so far as to make provision for reports that they are supposed to submit to the department in terms of the financials, but also in terms of performance. And those are done in the normal course of business. Quarterly reports on performance come in, I think, every quarter, essentially, and the other reports relating to finances as part of our in-year monitoring come in on a regular basis. I think it's on a monthly basis, if I'm correct, CFO. So the terms set out in the service level agreement effectively sets those two out as I've indicated.
Just to follow up on monitoring of these agreements, I mean, it's good to have an agreement. Is it worth the piece of paper that it's written on?
Can you please cell phone is a request each one of us to check our phones? Mine is off. That's for sure.
No, mine is off.
I mean, it's, when it does that, whatever is being said is not recorded.
Yeah, Chair, I'll just repeat the monitoring of the service level agreement. And also, as a follow-up to SASA, is SASA committed to any contracts that were signed in the past, which in hindsight is costing money, costing the taxpayer money? Okay.
All right. I think the question is more around the monitoring. The last part, I think he spoke to the savings that have been realized as a result of, you know, renegotiating some of these arrangements that are there. And I think the new tenders that are coming, I think the CEO has indicated that the arrangements that had been made were very unfavorable to the state. So they will be renegotiated. They were not imposed from outer space. It is our own officials who negotiated against the state and had this kind of onerous arrangement.
Yeah. Thank you, Honourable Member, and Mr. Chairperson. Are we monitoring the service level agreement? The answer is yes. Because the service level agreement provides for the reports I've referred to, and those reports are received by our policy side, the oversight entity, as well as our finance section. They go through them to make sure that SASA has reported in accordance with what is required of them. Whether the current oversight arrangements have been found to be inadequate, whether or not they are found to be adequate by the AG believes that more could be done than simply what is set out in the service level agreement. And this is a point I made earlier on. I don't know whether Chairperson would like me to expand on the point. it might verge into the area to what to reserve for them.
No, let's leave it at that.
Okay,
so let's leave it at that.
Zambi?
Sheldon?
Okay, I'll come back to you.
Thank you, sir. Mine is on page 91 of the SASSA annual report.
Page
91. All right. Note 29 and note 8. Note 29 and note 30. I wanted to know the breakdown of the two, the fruitless and useful expenditure and the irregular expenditure. I see there are figures of 129 and figures of 2.519 something. Then I want to know the breakdown of those things. Secondly, who was responsible for such? Thirdly, what steps have been taken?
No, let's deal with that question first.
Chairperson, the process of dealing with fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well as the irregular expenditure is through the Financial Misconduct Board. We unfortunately don't have the numbers on the breakdown here, but all the officials that are affected by this, who are responsible for those who have been in that process, through that process, some of them have already been charged for these transgressions. The main areas we found is on the listing of property, where the agreements are renewed late at the time. So these are the things that we have addressed to the point. Part of the amounts were relating to, I think, the trucks, the mobile trucks. So I guess we can give the progress limiter specifically on these issues later on a written communication to the members.
All right. Can we get a written breakdown, say, by next week, Tuesday, Wednesday? That'd be fun. Okay. Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, the last one is on page 85. You're not 22. The issue of the significant uncertainties as raised by the AG. You see the...
Page 85?
85.
Okay.
Of SASSA.
Right.
Contingency.
All right. Okay.
You see there are 1, 2, 7 issues that were litigation-related matters that they were reported under the financial year 2010. Given that today it is almost June, at the end of June, one would like to also understand the progress, because certain things, if you are to look at them, they are people who didn't do their job as they were expected to do. As you see a lot of these lawsuits that are indicated underneath here. So one will understand the progress made thus far in relation to this and the cost implications thereof.
What? Can I talk to that?
Initially, become comfortable when I have the statistics in my hand. But the bulk of the litigation that was accumulating at the time the function of all the provinces has been significantly cut. We gave statistics to the portfolio committee, but I was looking at my colleagues if they have this. But the main issue that is a major challenge now was the challenge by the cash payment contractor, one of the cash payment contractors. As you see, the first two bullets there were significant amounts were claimed by them relating to beneficiaries that
that chose to move to alternative payment channels, that is food banks and post office. Now, that case, in China, they have defended it successfully in the Supreme Court of Appeal, and I've received just information, negative information, that also the Constitutional Court has decided to throw it out of court, which was a big finding for us. Every time the AG was auditing, these things were uncertain because they were still pending. And therefore, they had a huge financial implication if they were to be suffered to lose those two cases. With regard to the wild litigation that those beneficiaries, this is an area where I say there were a number of decided judgments or court cases when this sanction was in the regions or provinces, where the judges were also challenging the question of whether we should, as government, challenge a right that is due to beneficiaries, a constitutional right, if we haven't done our work properly. However, if you go and analyze some of the individual cases, because they were in more than 40,000, and they have now come down to almost less than 5,000, I think, or even far less than that. I just need to take the statistics. Because of the litigious nature of the service itself, if somebody is not happy with the fact that the application has been turned down, there are various options. Amongst other things, which is the popular one, is to appeal to the minister. However, following that does not hold that person from going through courts to seek further recourse if they are still not satisfied with the outcome, even if the appeal committee has turned it down. So you find that you still have such kind of cases where the beneficiaries will still go to court. Because we have identified also that lawyers make big business out of this, and they, in that regard, only encourage people to do class action, what we call class action, where they will come into group to challenge the decisions made by the administrative decisions made by SASA. As was the state here, Chair, the reduction was from 60,758 in 2006 to 2,674 currently, which shows how much the what they call litigation strategy has assisted us to look into. And another strategy also was to look at what are the real reasons for litigation. Most instances, the state attorney and ourselves, we found that demands in actually responding to letters of demands, etc. So that strategy was to deal with specifically to agree in court that if it's 60 days, then each and every letter of demand should have been responded to, giving that particular beneficiary clear time frames by when they should expect a response to their query. So those are the kind of things that were picked up, that were dealt with in the strategy.
I've just got one or two short questions. The first is to the department. There seems to me a general lack of oversight by the department on the activities of SASA. And let me refer specifically to this whole question we've spent several hours now discussing, that is the rollout of the new financial system. The department would have known in 1999, with the establishment of the public entity, that eventually they would have to account using the accrual system. Why did the department not ensure that the system was in place? It had 10, 11 years to do so, to ensure a system would be in place, to avoid this kind of disclaimer we're seeing now, number one. And number two, why did the department not intervene when the management of the time at SASA decided to roll out this new system, despite the fact there was no pilot project, despite the fact that fully well knew there was insufficient skilled staff to do so? So in my view, it seems to be a lack of concern, a lack of oversight on the part of the department. That's the first one. Can I carry on?
No, not. But I have that one responded. Thank you, Chairperson. The South African Social Security Agency was only formed in 2006. The Public Finance Management Act, of course, came into operation in, I think it's 1999. I think that's the date the Honourable Member is referring to. But SASA then was not in existence, was not even contemplated. It was only in 2006 that it came into operation. And at that time, they were given an exemption of, I think it was an initial 2 years, it was extended once by a year. I think there is a complexity with regard to what is expected to form part of what the department exercises oversight on. There's a conflation of matters of law and matters of opinion. On matters of law, I would say that SASA being a Schedule 3A entity established in terms of the Public Finance Management Act means that it is an independent entity. You don't exercise oversight over its operations. You exercise oversight on whether or not it achieves the goals set for it. If you exercise oversight over operations, in fact, short of being directly involved in the daily management of SASA, which then makes a nonsense of its separate existence, one wonders exactly what that would entail. I know that the AG has expressed an opinion that the oversight systems that we currently have are not adequate, effectively requiring us to look at introducing into our oversight framework matters that will venture into the operations of SASA. We have taken the view that we will take a leap of faith in line with the expectations of the Auditor General, and indeed impose on the good nature of the Chief Executive Officer of SASA, who, if it were a different person, they probably would challenge whether or not we actually have the right to interfere in the daily management of an organization that is established in terms of Schedule 3A of the Public Finance Management Act. So we have a very complex arrangement, which, as I said earlier on, is not quite tested.
Or maybe Tishi, let's do this for our benefit. What is the monitoring framework that is in place? And in your view, how adequate is that framework? And the fact that the audit opinion of the department is directly impacted upon by the outcome of the audit of SASA. What then does that place on you in terms of the things you need to do to ensure that SASA delivers an unqualified audit, so that you yourself would then not have to then get qualified as well based on the outcome of their own audit opinion? Because yes, indeed, they are an independent organization, but I think in terms of the current arrangement, they are not that independent. Otherwise, their audit outcome should have absolutely no bearing on the department's audit opinion.
I like the way you have rephrased my question. Nobody suggesting that you get involved with day-to-day business, operational business, etc. But surely an accounting system is so fundamental to meet the very objectives which you must monitor. It is so fundamental to meeting those objectives that you must have involved yourself to ensure, yes, indeed, we do have a proper accounting system based on the accrual system. And there I'm very, very surprised that there seems to me to have been a lack of oversight. And the result is, as a result of that, SASA is in fact not meeting its objectives
which are fully within your ambit of monitoring.
Chairperson, I agree with the fact that in the current arrangement, the audit opinion that's expressed on the financials of SASA, especially insofar as the grant monies are concerned, will have a direct bearing on the department's financials. Whether that means SASA is not entirely independent is a matter that perhaps may need to be scrutinized further. I don't think that necessarily dilutes the independence of SASA. What it speaks to is a separate matter relating to the flow of funds, which is something within the purview of the National Treasury. If the National Treasury decided that the flow of funds would be different, that as in other public entities, the grant monies would go to SASA, whatever opinion gets expressed on the financials of SASA would not have a bearing on those of the department. I think that's the first point to be appreciated. But we are indeed alive to the fact that in the present environment, what happens to the financials of SASA impacts on us. Our oversight framework has always focused on policy oversight in relation to the policies that we generate to make sure that SASA in fact implements those. We're also looking at cooperative governance to make sure that in terms of the service level agreement we've entered into with them, they report as regularly as they are required in terms of the provisions of the service level agreement. And on the financial side, in terms of the service level agreement that they are reporting on the expenditure on that, what the service level agreement together in terms of the current framework has not done, which is something we are now looking into, is to require us to, in a sense, step into, in a sense, not be satisfied with the reports that we receive, but rather go directly into, to some extent, into the operations of SASA. For an example, if there are issues relating to files, we are now able to consider the fact that our internal audit section, because that's the only place where there's expertise to look into files whether or not, in fact, they would meet the requirements of the AG, whether there are risks involved with how the files are kept. We are now going to have to require our internal audits to spread itself. This is an internal audit of a national department of less than 900 people, the staff. It is now going to have to extend its capacity to venture into 9 provinces. I don't know with how many local offices where these applications are being taken and filed throughout the country. So that's a very complex matter we are being asked to consider. And certainly, it's a matter we are taking on board. We are going to have to engage with the Treasury based on the opinion expressed by the Auditor General just on that one matter.
Did you said on a monthly basis you get financial reports from SASA?
That's correct.
How do they assist you in your oversight responsibilities? What I'm trying to say is what are you able to pick out of them which you can then follow up, or whatever you pick up, how do you follow up on some of the deficiencies that arise out of those monthly reports?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think later on I'll ask the Chief Executive, the Chief Finance Officer, to add if he wishes to. But primarily what the information, the financial information we get tells us is whether or not the projected numbers of beneficiaries that we have used in estimate in basically asking for money to be allocated to us for beneficiaries, whether in fact the numbers of people that are receiving grants are tally with the numbers, with the amount that we've received to start with. When we have requirements to expand certain grant types, the report that we get will tell us whether, in fact, we are reaching out to the people, because that is the fundamental mandate from where we sit, whether or not the policies that we've generated in financial terms are impacting on the people for whom these monies are intended.
But is it not, I hear you, and I have an understanding of what the monthly reports are all about, but has there been no consideration, maybe, of at what point do the SASSA reports give you a sense of how, at an operational and administrative level, they are running their affairs in a way that is consistent with the PFMA, in a way that gives you confidence that come end of the year, the Auditor General is not going to come with a qualified audit opinion? I'm trying to check, because from what you're saying, I get a sense that the framework in terms of the substance of the report does not assist you to pick up some of those things. So the oversight and the information that you get tells you about the output, but in terms of how the processes are managed internally in a way that at the end of the year that is the totality of the operation. I think that there are elements that maybe in terms of the oversight framework should be built into, so that you are able to have information, you are able to see red flags, and you are able to comment, to talk to them, even if you don't have to go into their offices, but you are able to say, in terms of this report, on these items that you've given me, I'm getting a sense that maybe ABCD needs to be focused on, otherwise it is a red flag.
Indeed. I think part of that, Chairperson, is, and perhaps I should start off by saying that I agree with you, that to that extent, the current oversight framework is found to be inadequate. And part of the response to that is the point I made earlier on about the fact that most of the methods that you're referring to, which is now being suggested should form part of the oversight framework, are essentially the kind of things that audit committees are established to deal with. And there is an audit committee in SASSA. There is an audit committee in the Department of Social Development. We are moving towards getting the two audit committees to meet on a regular basis. So that will then assist us to get to that level, not with us directly getting involved in the operations, but using existing structures to get the information we need so that we can then engage with SASSA at the level that is required.
Without slipping my comments, just to tie that one, now the implication for me will be that if the audit committee of the department now interacts with the audit committee of SASSA and or with the management of SASSA, depending on how far do they go, the information that they get as an audit committee surely should be fed to you as management, that as an audit committee, this is what we found in SASSA. And we are therefore able to then engage the leadership of SASSA, that these are the things we've picked up, this is what your audit committee has picked up, how are you acting on this thing? I think that can go some way in enhancing your oversight work, rather than for you to see those things at the end of the year, and you are sitting here and are saying, but what did you do? What are you doing? And yet the flow of information that comes to you does not talk to the things that we're talking to here now. I think for me that is where the area that does need to be tweaked a bit. Yeah. Comrade Roy, Pretoria.
The other one when I began asking that you suggested I wait, it regards the capacity at SASSA. In particular, personnel. It would seem to me that you have a tremendous shortage of personnel at every level, skilled, unskilled, and you have indicated earlier on in some of your responses that you have begun recruiting. But can you give us some idea of your current vacancy rate? Research I have indicates that you have an approved structure of about 18,000 posts,
My research I've got indicates only 7,600 filled, and that gives a 58% vacancy rate. That's why we're seeing so many of these problems. The structure was originally premised on one staff member to 800 grant beneficiaries, and currently we have 1 to 3,000. And so that is where many of your problems begin, particularly at a low level, really, not only at a skilled level. At a skilled level, it's the reason why you have not been able to roll out successfully over all of these years the new financial system. At an unskilled level, it is why you are unable to document properly your 25 million beneficiary files. Why we heard earlier on of millions of files missing or misplaced. Because at that level also, I suspect, you don't have sufficient stock. And so if you can just give us some kind of indication of your vacancy rate, it would be very useful to give us an indication at the top levels and the bottom. Because while we would be concerned about assets lying around, your biggest asset, in my view, are these 25 million files. You know, if they're not correctly dealt with, filed, applied correctly, then you have a very, very serious problem. And I would like to know, too, at that level, do you have sufficient people to file these things?
All right. Let's just round off the question. Start with the wage. Yes, Pretoria, then Steel, and then the last one will be Matlati.
Chair,
please.
Thank you. You asked me to have a look at the previous annual report, and your memory is quite correct. In terms of the report, the wording is this resulted in 401 million overdraft, but I had made a note at the time of the hearing that the actual overdraft at that time was 1.2 billion rand. So it was rather high. So my question relates to...
So the 1 billion on page 26 is not a mistake.
Could be correct, yes.
No, it is correct.
Yeah.
Not could be. Because the deficit is on the paragraph to your extreme left. Of page 26 talks to 400 and something million deficit.
Yeah.
So the overdraft is something separate.
Jim, my question relates to the current annual report of page 22, which gives a breakdown of the number of beneficiaries per category and per year. Just a remark before I get to the actual question. You know, I can understand when figures differ from one year to the next because figures are fluid and flexible, but these are human beings, numbers of human beings who receive beneficiaries at various stages, and even those figures in the current year differ from the figures given to us last year in the annual report by some 30 to 40,000 per year. But that's not my question. I just want to say that Mrs. Peterson will have to buy herself a very smooth tooth comb to check the annual report in future, because there's a history now of lots of mistakes in the annual report. My question relates to the sustainability of the whole grant system. The number of beneficiaries has grown since 2005-06 by all about 28% over a four-year period. Which translates to annual growth of more than GDP growth per year. So somehow that tells me somehow we're getting into a crash situation. Where my question is, how can we sustain this? And I'm not arguing against the fact that there shouldn't be beneficiaries receiving money because they are poor, because they are disabled. I accept that we need to do that. But wealth obviously must be created in the country by having bigger GDP growth and fewer people receiving beneficiaries. Because we're receiving benefit as beneficiaries. What does the department do to plan? Now, are they making projections into the future to say that by X year we will almost have reached saturation where the figures might come down, might stabilize? Because at the moment it grows faster than our national growth. What's the department doing to try and figure out how can we get to a point where we can sustain it in the longer term? Because as it stands now, we probably will not be able to sustain it.
All right. I'm sure that might be a question of interest to Comrade Patel, the Economic Planning Department. But anyway, I'm sure it is a question
that does require some attention.
When you do a budget, you need to know figures, numbers.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Let's just note it down. I just want to take all the questions so that we... Honorable Steve?
Thank you. I've got one professor and one for the department. Professor Chair, just the Office of the Inspectorate for Social Assistance, which will only be established in the 2013-2014 financial year, I'd just like to know what plans are in place to address this need between now and then. Is the SIU going to fill the gap? Will they have internal capacity? Clearly, we need to have an inspectorate because it is projected for the future. I'd just like to know what plans are in place now to fulfill that need. That is addressing the whole issue of social grant fraud. And then, Chair, for the department, a question which is actually very general, but it relates to the future use of technology and cost-saving measures by the department. I did a little bit of research before I came here today. Approximately 13 million South Africans do not have bank accounts. That's about 27% of the South African total population, which presumably includes children. But, and this is the big but, we have one of the largest cell phone penetration rates on the continent, with about 94% of the adult population owning or having access to a cell phone. And mobile phones have the potential to enable convenient everyday transactions. My question then is, in the very near future, will the department recognize that using cell phone technology, they can reach almost 100% of the population to enable grants to be paid quickly, easily, cost-effectively, and with 100% reach of the population, and save an enormous amount of money by so doing? Is that being investigated? Is it on the cards? When can we expect to see a rollout that actually uses this kind of technology to save the state a considerable amount of money?
Thank you. Shulan, I said you'll be the last one. I want you to be the last one. Shulan, what was that?
Actually, it's not a question, it's a comment.
Let me take a question first.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have this scenario. The Department of Social Development has got a mandate to pay social grants to South Africans. Now they can't do it. They go and make an agency called SASSA to do that job for them. SASSA also fails to do it, and they employ CPS, Cash Pay Master System, services to do the work that the department wanted them to do. My question is, how much of the taxpayers' money is being spent in only managing the payment of grants? Not the grants themselves, just the system of management of their payments. Starting from how much SASSA gets from SASSA, how much does SASSA pay CPS? This is what I need the department to tell us. And is it necessary that we should be spending that lot of money that I would be given in that fashion?
You might be surprised, it might not be a lot of money. Just wait for the answer. Sure. Yes, Shulan?
Chairperson, just on a lighter note, we've been serious on the issue raised by Honorable Pretorius. I hope we're not going to fight on whether the grants, because they are going to take half of the GDP.
I wish we were going to the elections and I was going to do door to door. Maybe we'll get a different result for the Western Cape.
Oh, please. I see. I'll talk to that after the meeting. I don't want Matari to really be the last, so that the department in SASSA can respond in the remaining 15 minutes and also allow the minister to make an input. She'll be sitting very patiently and quietly listening, and I'm sure there will be issues you might want to talk to. See?
In addition to us being members of public accounts committees, we are members of parliament and we have constituencies. I just want to ask a strategic question. Maybe the minister can cover this, and I think it will help all of us here. Who is responsible for ensuring that proper facilities are provided where particularly our old people have to receive their payments? Because I think all of us can relate experiences here of current conditions where people have to expose themselves for hours.
I really hope that this cell phone does not belong to any of you comrades. At least I can talk to you. As for the other people, I cannot take responsibility.
Maybe. Someone will ring when I ask a question. Let me check mine. Mine is off. I was just going to ask that question.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think it's a real serious matter for all of us and for South Africans in general.
Okay. All right. Okay, no, that's fine. Can we get a response to this question around vacancies? The inspectorate, the use of technology, and whether in the service level agreements, the issue of facilities, and also the issue around the projection of the grant. Yeah, I'll start with the FASA, and then we'll give the DG, and then we'll go to the minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. In fact, Chairperson, the member is correct. It's 18,470 permanent positions. The point is there is a 59% vacancy rate, but this must be seen against what SASSA is currently doing as operations. We have to look at what is the projection of SASSA to be, and then say what amount of staff will we need for the enrollment process, which is the one process, the take-on process of grants, and then the paymaster process. There must also be negotiations with Treasury, because it is really unsustainable to refer to this as a vacancy rate when you're not completing the entire task, as you've already alluded to several times in this meeting today. So we need to benchmark ourselves against organizations who don't just take on things but also pay things. And that is our future. Yes, of course, automation is considered. We look at home affairs, their turnaround time, with cellular documentation, and use of cellular phone networks to assist. I want to say automation and not banking. I think there's a range of solutions we're currently exploring. We hope by inviting the next 18 months, Minister and also we are looking at the options at our disposal. We'll have to do a full pilot. We would hate to make mistakes we've made on other systems, because this would be grievous for a country who has to pay pensions to the poor to have even one slip-up, which is quite possible if you haven't piloted. So we will pilot, particularly from 3.5 years into the 5 years, to start seeing would the system work before and giving us sufficient time for the take-on. Therefore, the staff vacancy should not be seen in a vacuum. Treasury obviously will have to be lobbied to understand our situation. Even the facilities. Now we have a mixed bag of facilities in some provinces. The contract favors us. Where the particular service provider has to provide facilities where payments are done. In others, we actually took on, which is really the service to ourselves, how to manage the pay points. But generally, Chairperson, and I will say this because I've just come out of visiting 5 provinces already in 3 weeks looking at our worst pay points and our better pay points. There is work to be done. We have to treat our citizens as their constitutional right to receive this grant of pension. And we cannot allow this to continue. It wasn't clearly stated in the contractual obligation. We don't understand what we want other people to do, but government must pay this out in a proper manner. So I would see this as part of my commitment to the future, that our people do not get paid right on the hill without just basic water, not a bag for very far, or a chair for them to sit on. I think this is discouraging, what we see. In terms of, and I think the rest will be worked out through the DG about the inspector. I don't need to speak to that. I just want to clarify, it's not just CPS, ma'am. It's CPS and others. We have info where we all pay. There are different pay contractors, not just the one. Just so that there's clarity. Yes, yes, because otherwise people think that there's just one person. The cost thereof will be dealt with the team of the contractors. Thanks.
Maybe that's a... And I got quickly, the handling fee currently sits at about 3.4 billion per annum, which means for all the three contractors. The numbers you recall that I indicated that this has come down from 2.9 in the last 3-4 years. Now, going forward, the new payment model is likely to give us a lot of savings. However, you must realize that we have to build that enrollment capacity, the training capacity within SASA. Now, when we do an analysis, or rather a cost-benefit analysis of whether outsourcing is better than insourcing, you have to consider all that. That's why I'm comfortable when the CEO says we need to do a thorough study, thorough piloting, and ensure that whatever model we implement is going to be the best for South Africans so that we actually achieve our cost effectiveness on this whole process. Thanks.
DJ? Yes, Chairperson, on the other questions, I'd like to ask Mr. Dehoma, DG Social Security, to field the questions.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And honourable members, in response to the question on the sustainability, it is true that the social grant system, at least the number of beneficiaries has grown quite significantly since 2002. But what we can say, and this is the raw monitor, that we have as a country constantly kept that at less than 3.4% of GDP. Of course, we have years in a longer period of the recession when the country experienced minimal growth. But during that period, of course, the grants expanded to include children up to under the age of 18, which this year we've achieved. So going forward, we don't see any significant growth in beneficiary numbers, as we've seen close on average about 1 million every year since 2010. So that will taper off quite significantly. And of course, as long as the economy continues to grow, the country will be able to afford it. And then a key part of the question, as the Chair has indicated, has to do with employment creation to help us to balance the revenue that the country gets with the expenditures incurred as a result of maintaining the social grant system. The second question relates to the inspectorate. When the last Social Assistance Act was passed by Parliament, we had to deal with the establishment of SASA, which was then the priority, the establishment of the appeals tribunal. That I'm happy to report to the House has been successfully established, and the tribunals are making significant headway in reducing the number of appeals backlogs that we had. In fact, it is projected that by September of this year, we would have dealt with the appeals. So at this point, the inspector is being given priority to a project manager at a very senior level has been appointed to focus on that. The first task would be to deal with the legislation. Now, Parliament passed legislation, unfortunately, in which certain
inspector must undertake may coincide with what the SRO is currently doing, as well as SAFA's own internal compliance unit, its own internal audit unit, and so a review of the legislation is being undertaken. And I want to take comfort in the fact that in the interim, until we come back to that Act to Parliament, what is going to be undertaken is doing better comparisons between grant beneficiaries and other sources of where people get money, be it the tax system contributor, be it the personal system of government, so that anomalies are being pointed out in the system. Thank you, Chair and Members.
Thank you very much. Well, Comrade Minister, I do think that you have noted some of the issues to which you may want to respond to. Safe to say from my side that as we are dealing with this report, the person who was the CEO is not here. And as COPA was dealing mostly with the financials, the person who was the CFO is also not here. So the challenges around stability at the top, I think, is very important in building institutions. So even in the diagnostic report of the National Planning Commission, in terms of public service performance, that element around institutional stability, purpose of growth, is mentioned. So for me, I think that is the one point that comes through. So I hope the CEO will be here for quite some time. And the CFO will become permanent and permanently work and an account. Well, I see on page 22, that's a by-the-by, only the war veterans, their numbers are really going down. But despite the fact that life expectancy in South Africa is said to be going down, but if you look at old age, the numbers are increasing. So I don't know what's happening between the statisticians and what the department is able to capture in real terms, because the numbers are going up. So it means our old people are living longer, maybe than the younger ones. We don't know. All right. Well, we'd like to thank the SAFA officials, as well as the departmental officials for the inputs that they've given. And we hope that the issues that we've discussed here, and some of the issues that we have had queries on, some of the issues that promise to follow on, are indeed going to be followed up, so that we are a committee that is trying very hard to work itself out of a job. Get everyone to comply, and you have no need for a public accounts committee. Then we can loiter around Parliament and have nothing to do. But anyway, Comrade Minister, may I hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee, for affording us an opportunity to present our case to you. I've noted all the concerns you have raised regarding the department as well as SASA. I want to assure this committee of my commitment to good governance and improved service delivery, as well as access to human rights and dignity for our grant recipients. Because our belief is that grants are not just about money. And most of the time people want to focus on the money. It's about human rights, and it's also about the dignity of our people. As you've raised, Chairperson and members of the committee, SASSA has been grappling with a huge deficit and overdraft, as well as migration from a cash-based system to the accrual system. I'm even getting to understand finance terms through SASSA. And I, on a lighter note, I think a chairperson would have paid, even if we started earlier, would have paid for specialists to try and help us to adjust in this system. Because if you look at what was happening in grant payments previously, you really do need a sophisticated people presently so as to be able to do your work. And I don't want to go back where we come to where we come from. But one thing that I think we also need to say is that we are moving from unqualified audit. We've moved from unqualified audit to a disclaimer, and that is cause for concern and for great concern. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is that maybe we've been basking under the exemption of treasury. And maybe if we were left without the exemption, we could have moved very far by now. But it's fine. It was good for us to level the playing field. And I think we have to some stage leveled the playing field. One other thing that we have mentioned is that we've been able to halve the deficit, and also we've been able to reduce the irregular expenditure. And I think the CFO gave us figures, and I think we also need to appreciate that as the department. But what is also important is that Germans always stress that you can't praise the fish for swimming, because that is its responsibility. But I think we need to also say that we've taken action to strengthen the management and leadership by appointing the new CEO. And she has promised to finalize the appointment of staff in critical positions urgently. But one other thing that we've done is that we've been having meetings with the AG, and the reds and the cautions and the greens have been identified. Firstly, we had a meeting. We had a workshop to discuss the issues that were in the report, the issue of leadership, the issue of governance, as well as the issue of financial accountability and management. And we agreed on how we're going to try and deal with those issues. But also we had a second meeting to look at the issues I've mentioned before. And also when the new CEO was appointed, we had a special meeting to look at the important areas that SASSA needs to look into if we want to come out better from the previous situation. The other things that we have looked into and we have mentioned are the issues of staffing. And that I always say that SASSA has a big head. We had more staff at head office than in regions, and we are trying to address that. And secondly, issue of automation has been raised, and we hope that this is going to help us to have our database. Because if you can say to us now, move and do your things on your own, we won't be able to deliver that. And I think we need to be honest so that everyone can understand where we are. And also the new payment model. what we need to do, I think our responsibility as the present government is to maximize the work that was done by Minister Zola Skweyiya. Because much as some may feel that there is a lot of work that we were supposed to do in terms of owning the payment system, but a lot of work was done by Minister Zola Skweyiya, and we need to give a clue to that. And that will be proved by us being able to deliver on the issues of automation as well as the new payment model. But the other thing that I thought I should raise is that there are many payment models that we are using. We are using CPS, Mpilweni, Allpay, banks, and the post office. And what has been happening is that people come and say there is a new system that is going to work very well, and we run to that. And last week or 2 weeks ago, I was going to Mthatha. I found out that one model that is supposed to be amongst the best is still a problem for us, because older persons still wake up very early in the morning. They go and wait there. They don't care whether they open at 8. At 4 o'clock, they are there. And also the distance has proven to be a problem with this model. But when people came to us to say it's the best, we thought it was the best. So we need to look carefully at what is going to work. And I suppose what members of parliament with due respect, are supposed to say to us is look for a technology or the best system. But you should not say the cell phone is the best, because cell phone belongs to companies. And I think it's not fair for us to be decisive and think that things are working, because some of the things have been recommended previously and have proved not to work for some of the constituencies. So it's good for us to be balanced and look at issues broadly. The IT system, you raised the issue of the IT system. Right now there is a project that is called a Project Dozier in SASA. It's supposed to be a private and confidential, and it's only vetted staff that can access it. But you know what the problem it's for me that I've raised at SASA and social development is that why do we have a Project Dozier as confidential and private if it's driven by people from outside, by a company, because that it aims to be private as soon as it's driven by external people. So trying to ensure that we employ services or we employ people that will be able to provide this service internally will help us to maximize our work. And I think that is what we should move towards. But with the IT, I don't want to promise for now, Chairperson, but what we have committed are the issues that I've mentioned before, staffing, automation, and the new payment model. We think we'll be able to address most of the issues that members have raised here. And one other thing that we've done in the new tender, there are things we have specified or offers that was made. For instance, we have offered 10% reduction to the transaction or to the administration of the grants, and we hope that we'll reduce the amount that Mematadi talked about, because we've been trying to reduce the amount, and no one has complained about that, and we're saying maybe we should have offered more, because it would have made maybe a bigger difference. and also reconciliation and balancing of the statements. All people will have to do that on a monthly basis, because that has been a problem too. You'll find out that that has contributed to a number of problems that we are having. Number three, biometrics for everyone, so that we don't have people that we don't know going to claim money or to get a grant for people. And we think that much as it is going to make a small difference, but it will take us forward. So we think the issues that was brought into the new tender are going to make a very big difference, because we're trying to ensure that much as we have said that we want to ensure that there are human rights and dignity for our people, we need to be sensitive to other challenges that we've been facing. And that lastly, Chairperson, we are going to look at the ways of strengthening our monitoring role of SASSA. We've heard that it's a concern for almost all members of the committee. So much as we've said that we're going to try and link the work of both the audit committees, but we've heard that you want us to look at operations. So we're going to go back to the drawing board and see and look into how we can look into operations, but also accounting from the CEO goes straight to the office of the minister. Is it not so? What we're trying to do is to try and ensure that there is a link between the CEO and the director general, so that we can be able. These are the things that we can do even without having regulations. And we've already had I've had a meeting with the DG to discuss that as well as the CEO, because we want to ensure that there is a greater cooperation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Comrade Minister, and the Deputy Minister, DG, and SASSA. I just want to make an appeal on behalf of my comrades to the SASSA officials, because some of my comrades, in a few years' time, when their political life expires, they'll come knocking at your door for old age pension. So don't come around and say, you. So I'm making an appeal. So some of my comrades, when they come to you, there should be no backlash. Thank you very much.